Side note, Maria, you are right. It does not initially describe the picture on the book, but what I meant, more importantly, that was not my argument, though.
I was saying that once he hands it to the assistant after the Clovis takes it from him, then he sees it.
The point is that when it is first described,
you know what I knew what it was. Yes. When he first picked it up, he couldn't see it. He hands it to the assistant. Then it describes the cover.
You are right.
One time, one of our first memories is Maria misremembering the beginning to the Amulet of Zarnarkand books. And she was like, I'm right about this. And I was right, actually. And that's the one time that's happened. And so I still like bringing it up.
Oh my God. That must have felt so goddamn liberating, Will.
No, but it was so early in our friendship that it wouldn't have the same, like, if that happened now, I think the value of it would be worth so much more because it's like the only time it's happened.
No, I still hold on to it warm in my heart in dark moments.
Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of your favorite podcast, Unresolved Textual Tension. It's me, your host, Maria, and with me today, my handsome bitches, Katie and William. Ooh, so handsome, Ooh. So bitchy. Ooh.
And maybe I'm a dog person. We'll see by the end of this video. And you guys just can't see it because of your expectations. And Katie, what book are we doing today?
The book that wouldn't burn.
By who, Katie? By who? Who's the author?
Do you know what the author's name is?
It's Mark Lawrence. I specifically made sure I remembered, but Katie didn't know because she didn't do the job either. And also, that's not my job. My job is to be the face.
This is a democracy, and me and Katie have decided it's your job.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so I have actually read a Mark Lawrence book before. I think I read the first of his Prince of Nothing books, and this was very different from it. That book is very grim, dark, edgy, and so I was kind of interested to see how this one worked out. This is a book that is much more standard fantasy than the romantasy and YA we've been reading, and thank God, because while this book has issues, it was so much more readable and enjoyable, and the romance in it was so much less odious because the author wasn't trying to be spicy with it. This is going to be an odd book to talk about because I think a bit like The Murmuring Bones, this is a book I enjoyed and I liked, but like I have a lot of notes about it and complaints. It just has issues and stuff. And like, I think the book just would be so much stronger if it was 30% shorter.
Cleaner.
Yeah. And it just, there's too long. I don't care about this stupid fire that's going on for half the book.
One of the very first things I noticed, and I complained about it to Maria while I was in traffic, because I literally paused the audiobook, called her and complained about it, was that it's so repetitive, especially in Ivar's chapters, like in the first like half of the book. It's like, they'll tell you what happened just 5 seconds ago, and then in the middle of the chapter, then they'll say it, he'll say it again in the same, like, sort of wording. And it's like, this isn't an anime. I don't need a recount of what just happened before.
And it happened later. I noticed it again in one of Lavira's chapters. These are our two main characters that are the POV characters. But literally, it was like, she couldn't stop thinking about this thing for the past 3 days since she last saw Ivar. And then she talks about it. And then, like, 5 pages later, she's like, it had been 3 days and she couldn't stop thinking about this thing since she last saw Ivar. And I'm like, you just said, like, it's weird because, like, Katie and I were like, was there no editor? But which is insane. It wouldn't be as good as it is without one. And if it was, then, like, you know, God tier.
I wonder how much of it is a genre convention where he's just like, oh, I have all this space, I'll fill it. Whereas if he wasn't working, like, in YA, he'd be like, no, this can't be 28 hours long. I don't know if it's 28 hours long.
I love how Ivar's siblings were introduced as though they were MMO classes. I know.
Before you jump in farther, though, Maria, what is the basic premise of this? Because people complain that we don't do the premise first, and I understand, but we just get carried away.
The premise of this book is a society that centers around a library as a wealth of knowledge where things go because the library has so much information. Societies develop very quickly, and around this library which is centered in this city, there is this dusty, like, deserted area that is populated by small groups of humans. Their enemy, who they refer to also, this is going to be a thing, they're called Sabas. It's spelled Saber. Saber.
To be fair, I think it's just the narrator, because she also, the narrator, says Eva instead of Ivar, and I don't know if it's supposed to be pronounced that way or if it's just her accent, so I think it just happens.
Sometimes she pronounces it Sapa. like a little bit.
Yeah,
I couldn't figure out which one was quite which, but yeah, no, we're gonna call them Saba.
The Saba, and they are a humanoid canine group of people where they have their legs are like dog legs, but they stand upright.
These are Tigrayan.
Humanoid features, but a little cross with canine feline.
Marie and I had a very frustrating conversation yesterday. How the descriptions of the wolf dog people are not consistent, and I'm not really sure what to picture. It's because half the time I'm like, wait, are they mostly human? They just have fucked up legs with some like weird hair, or are they covered in fur?
These integrated legs are actually far more efficient than human legs. Okay, but go ahead. They're not fucked up. Our legs are fucked up.
I'm just calling it the way it is from Leviosa's perspective.
Wingardium?
Point is, though, is that I'm not entirely sure how wolf-like or how dog-like they're supposed to look. Continue, Maria, with the premise.
In one of these communities out in the dust outside the city is our main character Lavira. Her settlement is attacked by the Sabas, and which starts her quest into the city of Krath, into the library where she trains as a librarian. But this library defies time and species lines. It has books from everywhere, and so it is her. And then there's also a second main character who is trapped in the library somewhere with his siblings.
Oh, I thought you said who's trash, which is true.
No. Who is trapped in the library somewhere with his five siblings in a specific room because the library has massive rooms, and he how do you even explain the mechanism? He lost a huge chunk of his mirror. It's kind of Piranesi, but he has some people in there with him, and he is on a quest to find the vague figment of a woman in his dreams from his memories that he can't actually remember, but he knows a woman was involved somehow. So he's looking for that. Lavira is trying to become heckin' good librarian and find out the secrets of the library, and their quest brings them closer together. And how do things play out? Premise.
Hilarity ensues. Yes. Okay. Hilarity. Good job.
The most important question: is this monster boyfriend?
No.
No. No. Absolutely not.
Doesn't count.
Absolutely not. It would have been monster boyfriend. I would have given it to them, except they denied the fundamental precept of monster boyfriend, which is you have to fall in love when he looks like the monster. You can't fall in love when he looks like a normal human guy. Not Monster Boyfriend.
That won't become a YouTube short. Very true. I had thought about that as well, and I was like, no, it's betraying. And then also, he's mostly just like a dog person, and like furries exist, so that doesn't count.
No, but it could have been a really fun Monster Boyfriend. Imagine if he was actually the name of the thing that's only mentioned like two times, the insectoid people, and she fell in love with an insectoid. That would have been really startling.
I do like how the more evil one is the less human-looking one.
I enjoyed this book a lot. For how long it was weirdly enjoyable. There were some points where I was like, okay, this is a little long. For me, part of the problem is I enjoyed some of the slower parts. Like, I enjoyed the first third, and it's kind of pace a little bit, and then the last third is way more sped up. You go from spanning years and years and years and years to, okay, we're going to have like 3 days that take up a giant chunk of this book. And I also, for me, I thought Ivar's plot in the first half, I found him very, I don't want to say pointless, but kind of pointless. Like, it makes sense. Like, you need, I get why it's there, but I also don't want it. And I found it very boring, and I found him kind of boring. And it wasn't until he finally, like, met up with her that things got interesting. And so I wish that there was a way to have done that in a better way. I wish she would have found, there are ways. But anyway, I also did not love the romance. I didn't dislike it. I didn't think it was gross. It didn't make me,
recoil in disgust.
Recoil in disgust. And it's just, for me, what it lacked was my emotional investment in it as a romance, where, like, the book was like, ah, yes, this is the romance, but without insisting too hard upon it. It wasn't like, the star-crossed lovers, ooh, the sex bodies, you know, it wasn't doing that. But For me, I just wasn't invested because they had spent so little actual time together. I got why Lavera was into him, because young girls, and I think young people's ability to build people up in their minds as these big figures. But for me, that was never challenged. Like, I got why she had fixated on him, but there was no challenge of what he was in her mind versus who he actually was, which would have been super interesting. And then I also just didn't fully understand why, like, he was in love with her after, like I just, and the whole book thing. I liked a lot of this. I liked the idea of the cyclical nature of war, of the repetitiveness, how we will make enemies of anyone. I liked a lot of that stuff. But there was a couple of things that I just, best character, Valente.
Oh my God, yes. Yeah.
Yes. I loved
good
it.
Doggo. I will say that I thought that the two storylines were both okay, but they did not complement each other well. This either needs to be Piranesi, where it's just from the point of view of Eva, where then it's girl he keeps meeting as she gets older each time, a la the Consul's Tale from Hyperion. Mm. And that is an interesting story. Man who's stuck in this very weird liminal place. The library is an ecosystem, even though it's not enough of an ecosystem in its own right, but whatever, we'll talk about that later. That I really would have liked, or I would have liked, girl keeps going back to the library and meets somebody who's stuck there. But the two together, I found clashed. Like, I kept being like, can we get back to Lavera's part? Do we have to keep going back to this guy? And yeah, Maria's totally right. It does not make sense that in a day he would be like all over her. And yes, we'll talk later about why there are reasons for that, but I emotionally didn't
you
buy
as
it.
The reader, like, I didn't fall in love with them as a couple, you know? Like, there has to be that moment where you as the reader are like, oh my God, they're kind of cute together. But unfortunately, what this book does is it plays its hand. Ivar knows he was once in love with someone and is searching for the woman of his faded memories. And you know it's going to be Lavera. So there's no point where you see the two of them interact and you're like, oh.
I was really hoping it was going to actually fit that expectation and it was going to be something else.
Here's one question, and I'll ask you guys. Did you feel like Lavera's personality changed into a little bit more manic pixie girl as the book went on?
Stop. I have something to say about that, okay? That was going to be my whole shit because you guys already covered a lot of stuff just now, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
I was going to discuss how the pacing frustrated me, including the characterization of our main characters as time went on throughout the story. Ivar has no plot, has no character development, almost like whatsoever. And a majority of the problem is that he's like this safe man, like, type of thing, or as you were saying, like, the straight man type of thing, where he's supposed to be, like, a do-gooder, but it was kind of frustrating. It's because through the lack of strife or tension in his personality and choices and stuff, and even then, it's not like he has to be considering, oh, am I gonna kill this person or not, but he was not given any situation that could define him in any meaningful way. And every time we got to his chapter, I was fine with it, but it was also simultaneously like, oh, so we're going to slow down massively. Yes, I know, Maria. And we're going to slow down massively, and I'm not going to get almost anything out of this chapter. Not to mention that half the chapters themselves were, like, as I already said, kind of repeating what happened in the last chapter. Almost nothing really happens. Ivar needs his own actual, like, plot beyond just finding Lavera. Although, it could just be finding Lavera, that's fine, but there needs to be some hijinks that ensue in between rather than him just ghosting in and out of, like, the past or whatever. And just seeing some really depressing stuff that doesn't actually help contribute towards almost anything other than him seeing this one thing, but we'll get to that. And even then, it does almost nothing. In fact, I would argue it's completely pointless. But Lavera herself, when she's younger, I really liked Lavera. Lavera is great. I was instantly hooked on her personality. Loved her. Then she became an adult. And when she became an adult, all of a sudden, she's starting hating on the Sabbas, and she's like, oh, they should die. Whereas when she was younger, there was not that much animosity between her and them. It was more like, wow, that really sucked, but I'm looking at it from this like very curious perspective. And I want to like, she wanted to learn their language. She wanted to know more about them. She was asking them, like she was engaged, and she almost recognized as a child a very wise like detail that it's just people against people. And yet that changes. Like, when she becomes an adult?
Her hatred of the Saba feel very counter to the character that is established, who she is. She is presented to us as someone who is a sponge, who remembers things vividly, who, even as a child, she realized that actually maybe they weren't gonna eat the children. Like, when she asked, like, are you gonna eat us? And the Saba went, are you good to eat? She, like, as a child, and so there's this really weird thing where her hatred of the Saba requires her to be dumber than she is.
Yes.
In a fundamental way.
And she got dumber over time.
And for her to see the things she sees at a later point and not put the pieces together, where you as the reader are like, they're fucking there. Because there are times where she puts stuff together and I was like, oh, I mean, I see how that happened.
I told Maria yesterday, I was like, when she and Ivar go into the past and see all the Saba and the humans lying around dead with each other, the very first thing that comes to me, the reader's mind, is, oh, so they lived in harmony at one point rather than being against each other. And the instant thing she's like, and she's like, they're idiots. They killed themselves in trying to kill the others.
That was so stupid.
I get why Ivar wouldn't make that conclusion, because Ivar is not as smart as her, but the fact that you have built this character to be as intelligent, as quick-witted and as sharp in a very specific way, and then all of a sudden it's like, we need all the weapons to kill the Sabbaths. How could this possibly go wrong for us? Like just
it didn't make any sense.
Miss Alice Snow has a good one. She says, Lavera's minimal personality changes seem dependent on the plot. And that's something I saw a lot in the Discord. By the way, we have a Discord. We'll shill for it in a moment. But that a lot of people were saying that, like, the characters really conform to the plot instead of the other way around. And that's something I really felt. It felt a lot like, well, the characters need to be doing this thing now and they need to be thinking this thing for the plot to make sense. But you're not like, okay, but they're not driving the plot, so to speak. But when I say Discord, how would you get into a Discord? What
join
is
our
Discord?
Patreon. We have three tiers. We have our Patreon tier, where you get to be in the Discord and talk to lots of people. There's also a lot of writers if you'd like to join. We have our book club members. We do live streams twice a month, one of which they get to pick the books and vote on them and decide what we do, one of which we pick.
That's
and
this
then they
one.
Get to read with us. Yeah, this is the one. Woohoo! End of month live stream. And then we have our Parasocial Darlings, which gets all the benefit of the previous tour. Plus, they get critique streams where Katie and William look at books at a micro level to see how the language is working. Join, it's a good time. Also, if you can't comment, like, engage with this video, the algorithm really likes it. Back to this, because I want to make a point. So Angry Otter says, well, they did kill her aunt and tried to enslave her, and
yes,
and that's why it would make sense if young her hated them viciously, but as she got older and she read more and she saw the cyclical nature, like, it makes no sense to me that you is literally like, here are the pieces, Lavera. You are smartest girl I know. Take the puzzle pieces. And she's like, no, fuck your puzzle pieces, as an adult.
Also, she didn't really like her aunt. That's the thing, is that I never got the sense that she even liked the people she was from or felt connected to them. So there was no loss. She just joined the library and was like, dope.
That is what happened, William. That is exactly what happened and what it should have been. It's because I thought she was supposed to be like, not a sociopath, obviously, but she was, like, so intelligent and beyond her little microcosm of a community.
She was dehydrated by the waste. She was just a survival instinct. She was cunning. And then in dialogue, all of a sudden, she's like, I'm willful, guys. It's cool. I'm a magic pixie teen girl. Like, and it was such a weird, jarring change to me, but that's not what we're talking about. We just talked about that. Go ahead.
One thing I was going to say, though, real quick, is there's this one very specific part where you're talking about, Maria, right? Where she's being led away, roped up, a prisoner of the Saba, and she's thinking to herself, there's a lot of hurt and anger inside me, but I'm going to put it in a little box and I'm going to shove it all the way in the back. And I'm like, okay, that right there already shows how emotionally, like, in both intelligent and also not mature she is. So that's great. That's fine. I'm cool with that, because she's kind of a weirdo with how smart she is. But then, like, When did she reopen the box? We never got that scene.
There's the scene when she finally gets into the library and she's in her own room there and she cries. But that's it. Like, but it's not her processing. It's just her crying. And again, I don't mind that she dislikes the Saba. What I mind is that as she gets older, and despite the fact that she is seeing things that nobody else around her is seeing, that she's literally being led by Yute, and this makes no sense for the people who are listening, but Yute is one of the top parts of the... Despite all of that, that she... And part of it was her hatred, while it could have been justified, didn't feel real emotionally. Clovis's hatred feels real and defined and angry. Lavira's, like, comes in and out. It's not something that she lives with, because I'm fine with if she had been described as a character where that hatred was always a huge part of her, like, if she, like, if we just felt it more, that was my thing, is I don't feel like it was as vivid as it needed to be to justify her completely disregarding what you was telling her.
I thought, oh, I almost felt like I missed something. When she turned, I think it was like 18 or 20 or something like that. Like the scene, there's a scene where she's, so the first half of the book is like very much, much slower in the way of the pacing, which I actually preferred that one, but whatever, that's neither here nor there. But then it speeds up. It's because we need Lavira to get, you know, old enough to fuck. And, am I wrong?
No.
Yes. No, but that's going to be the cold open.
Yeah. There's this one scene where she's in this like shopping plaza and her book friend that also like really wants to, you know, be with her, but she's like, nah, bro, I'm like too hot for this like dude in the middle of nowhere, that I've seen like for 5 seconds. But anyway, the point is though, is she's there and then there's an attack. And she, like, freezes up, and then, like, all of a sudden we start really hearing her spewing the whole, like, we need weapons to kill them stuff. And I'm like, wait a second. Where was the scene where this incited? Like, where, why, how did she change to be such a radical in this view? I mean, I could understand it being surrounded by her new friends who are human in a library in a city full of humans, full of, like, a whole bunch of all of that bias, but it never is shown to us.
Well, she could also do the whole insecure immigrant thing where they then become more fascist than the people that are there. A la Napoleon is not French, he's Corsican. Hitler is not actually German, he's more like Austrian. And, like, that thing where as a minority you have to be outspoken. The Blair White syndrome, you have to become more outspoken because you want to be the one true whatever thing to fit in. That could have happened, but the book spends so much time with nothing happening, and then there's like when there should be more interaction between like her and Eva and like showing of that arc, there it just isn't there.
Angry Otter makes a quick point. There are people who get knowledge.
There are people who get knowledge, but not people. Oh, they get knowledge as in, but they don't understand people.
People, yes. So I didn't mind her being a little dense, though it did drag on too long, especially when they saw the city full of humans and dog people and she didn't get what was happening. And that's the thing, is it does, like I said, I'm okay. And what Katie said is perfectly correct. If you had built up the hatred as her assimilating to the society, and despite the fact that she kind of knows better, she has to ignore the voices in her head. Like, I'm okay with that. But it's not there. Real quick, I want to make a comment about Ivar. The big problem with Ivar, my boy... Not my boy.
That he's a wiener?
No, he has no agency. His inciting incident to jump into the well to try find her isn't something he just decided to do. A book told him to do it. Ivar has no agency for the majority of the book. It is not until the end when he's like, must to save her, where you're like, okay, that kind of like, he's had an idea of what he needs to do and now he's going to do it. But by making his entire purpose, Ivar is our second main character, as we mentioned, and his entire purpose is to find Lavira. He doesn't know it's Lavira, but that's his entire purpose. And unfortunately, what that does is it flattens him as a character. All of his agency is being pushed aside on this quest. You rarely feel like there's no point where he's like, no, I want other things besides this, but yet he's forced down the path, and even his decisions away from it forces him down this path, which would have been fascinating. Could you have imagined the force of the library pushing these two or like this thing, and he like fighting against it and trying to work against it, but like it just happening? Like, that would have been a fantastic thing to engage with and would have given him some depth. Unfortunately, he's got none. Even when he goes and he sees there's a huge part of the book where all of his chapters are him observing things happen to other people. That's it. He's not actually doing anything. He is becoming Ivar is a lot of the story trying to get information into the reader through Ivar observing and interacting with things. And not in a way where it feels like it's organic to the character. It feels like the character is a bit blank and thus we are watching him get filled. And it makes it for a very frustrating read because Lavira is not like that at all. Lavira is... Sometimes you're like, where did you get this idea, Lavira? Like, but it is...
Part of the problem is his whole plot line takes place in the span of, like, 24 hours to 48. So, like, there's not really a chance for him to change much. Katie is having an aneurysm. Go ahead.
I'm very politely waiting until she was finished with her point. Would I prefer that? Yes. That is my preference. However, I'm totally fine with his, like, main MO being... that was repetitive. His MO being... Lavira and figuring out who she is and why he has this good. First of all, Maria and I are on the same page. Probably Will is too, I'd imagine. Maybe, maybe not. That the whole, we'll get to it at some point, but the reason he knows her is because she like wrote something and he like lived it. It doesn't matter. We'll get there. But the point is like, that's kind of a cop out in my opinion. And I don't really like it. It seems really watered down in a couple of ways that we'll get to once we get into more detail, but that's neither here nor there. But the point is like, I'm fine with him being like, oh, I lived this life with someone. It feels ghost-like. I don't know who that is. I want to find that person. But how does that person... I would have preferred the more complicated nature of that. Like, this person probably doesn't exist. It's because, like, I mean, she's long dead. Or, like, so she existed before, which she probably didn't because I was a child. Because when he originally... We'll get into it. Point is, he was a child when before he goes into this like stasis thing, and then he comes out, and then he grows up in the library. But the point is like, I'm fine with him wanting to find out who Lavira is. However, like comboed with what William says, we are given very little time with him. And what time we are given, he doesn't go on a journey of any real sort. The only journey he goes through is he goes to the exchange, which is this magical, amazing place where things that are crazy can happen. And nothing crazy happens. He just jumps into these two portals to look at the past. And he observes the past. He's just looking at things. But he is not fighting anything. He's not doing anything. It has been made. I almost felt like the author meant to do it and then forgot to do it. Is that it's constantly said he's not as good as his siblings. Clovis, his one female sibling, is like really good at fighting. What's the S name?
I don't remember the other two. There's a psychology one and there's a spy one.
Stavel is a great assassin. Or whatever. Then there's Carol, and he's like a psychologist, basically. And then there was another dude who knew a lot about history that just like went missing. But the point is he very often mentions that he has learned so much. And then in these little bubbles of moments throughout later on when he interacts with others, he's like, oh, wow, even though compared to the masters, my siblings, I'm still pretty good because I've learned so much from them. And instead of that being the journey that he discovers, I felt like that was supposed to be his journey, learning that even though he came out of this mechanism thing that we'll talk about and he didn't have any super cool MMO skills, he still was able to learn from them and be empathetic. And we don't get any scenes where he has to use that empathy to solve a problem, except for later on in the main storyline, but not through his own character arc. We don't really get, I mean, baby bits, but nothing that really matters. And then we don't get any like, oh, he has to assassinate someone and he's really good at it. Or he has to, we get like a few little fight scenes. We don't get any like, oh, he understands the inner mind of people like his sibling Carol. And then he slowly but surely follows the little past to realizing, oh, he's his own individual person. And then, like, he doesn't have, like, a force working against him like Lavira does. So it's very, very boring on his side of things. And so it does really feel like his perspective was purely given because Lavira needed a boyfriend.
It's really bizarre because there's a point where he says he feels like his siblings are complete people because they have... a thing that defines them, which is, and there's no point where he realizes, oh, that's dumb. They are not complete people. They are not whole. They have never interacted with anyone. And by my interaction with Lavira and meeting other people and expanding who I know, that is what is making me more whole. Because I don't like the idea. I just hate this as a convention.
I know.
This is purely a me thing. I hate this. This person is my purpose and my completion. I don't like it. It is so, it plays into everything we're told about love and romance.
Depends how it's portrayed.
The thing is that me and Katie are shipper trash, and so we fundamentally like it, but we're also both smart enough to go, oh, it's not great for a character motivation.
I'm fine with a character whose other purpose is another character, but there if it is that, there needs to be... It's like eating... Okay, it's like eating a steak that has not been seasoned whatsoever.
Oh, God. Are we doing food metaphors again?
Let me finish. There's no salt. There's no A1 steak sauce. There's nothing. There's nothing on it. So if you're going to serve... Yeah, no. So if you're going to serve that to someone, it better be... Oh, when you taste it, all the different little levels of fatty morsel. Like, it better be cooked goddamn well if it's going to be unseasoned and give it to me. So that's what I'm saying.
So again, please note that some of my comments here are going to be from a personal preference where this just is not a trope I like. For me, it just feeds into a lot of things. Angry Otter made a point that I love. This is exactly what I want out of this. I would have enjoyed them being besties instead of lovers. Maybe they become lovers in the next book. I liked Ivar, but his point of view needed a lot of tweaking to match Lavira's energy. The thing is, by setting it up as a lover's thing, it flattens it so much. I like the idea of him being in search of another person. Someone who, like, I don't like the idea of feeling like it's romantic. Because the idea of getting out of the space, I mean, he's trapped with his siblings in a giant library room 2 miles in any direction. Like, that's as much as you got, you know? And two, like, I'm gonna call them robot people, we'll explain what they are. The idea of just being on a quest to find someone else and him knowing that he should be able to find this other person, just as I want to know more than I know now, for me would have made so much more sense. And I also like the idea of them, you know, being friends first and not going directly into lovers, because that is just, I hate that. He exists for Lavira. It's just so... He's not a person in his own right. That's the problem.
Here's the thing. When you are in love, you are riding a dopamine high. You are basically drugged into liking the other person, sexually or emotionally, to an extent, right? And, like, that's not to be cynical about it. That's just how it is. This is why, like, attraction starts to die out after a certain period, because your brain literally stops feeding you the correct chemicals. And obviously there's a deeper forms of love or whatever, but I'm just talking about for initially. And the thing about it is, because of that, romance can cheapen a relationship. Not to be one of those people who's always like, but in my book, all the time. But I remember in one story I was writing, I was planning a romance between these two characters, and I kept pushing it farther and farther until it actually wasn't even in the book, because it cheapened the connection that they had as people and their relationship and dynamic. And the thing about it is that all that Maria was saying about Lavira being another person and that fundamentally being special in his world gets kind of undone if it's just hormones and it's just like this burning passion or love or whatever. And again, this book is much better about it than a lot of the other books we've read. Again, we're ragging a lot on this book, but it does it so much. I prefer this romance so much more to everything else. And the other thing is that, and I've talked about this all the time, foreplay is important. Women don't understand this, but it is. And the thing is that you always want to be slightly trailing your reader and how much they want the two of them to get together. You don't ever really want to get them together more than the readers do, because then the reader starts going like, again, it's that whole flirting thing. Like, you don't want to give too much too early, and then the author's hand shows and it feels like it's insisting on a thing instead of rewarding you for a thing. And this book overtakes that very quickly. Like, initially I thought it was like a little bit sweet, and then by like halfway through the book I was like, oh my god, you guys need to chill out.
Laura says, yeah, same. And this is about Ivar. Laura B says, yeah, same. I really liked him, but I wish he'd spent his time doing other stuff and not just reciting all the stuff about his siblings over and over. Also, I'm not quite sure he forgets her after being in the mechanism.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Would have been interesting for him to remember something, but not enough, and then have to reconcile that with her changing/aging persona when they finally meet.
Okay, that was gonna... God damn you, Laura. That was gonna be my crowning jewel comment at the very end of everything. It's because that's something that occurred to me this morning. I remember what I was gonna say. Yeah, despite the fact that for almost an hour, we have been ragging on this book, I have to say, I highly recommend anyone who likes fantasy like this. It's because, or I highly recommend this book to anyone who likes fantasy like this. It's because it is incredibly well written. I just really wish we were basically given the same pacing as what we got at the beginning, but throughout this book, and Livira never got older than like 15.
How could they have sex later if she's 15? Katie, think ahead.
That's what I'm saying. Friends to lovers type, or enemies to friends to lovers, whatever. Like, this could have been a true that. And I don't, God, there's just so much. There's so much. I just feel like you said, 30% of fat. This is just a hunk of really delicious prime cut
No,
meat,
no, no,
but it needs
no,
to be
no.
One of the things I will say is descriptions in this book, and this is a general comment, and then we'll go into the plot. Descriptions in this book can sometimes be a little bit hard to follow. I thought at first that this was an active thing the author was doing because there are specific things that Ivar and Livira see differently, and so I thought the fast and loose nature of the descriptions was playing into that. But there are some times where either the description's hard to follow and you're like, what the fuck did I just listen to? And you
Like
have
the
to like
Sabbaths.
And then other times where I'm like, do you remember how you first described them? Are you describing it the same way? And I think part of that is what causes my giant plot hole, but also it is just a giant plot hole. But we'll get to it. Let's do the plot, shall we? As I said in my little premise of the book, our story starts in the dust, in the desert, the dust outside the city. In what used to be a lake. It is in the bed of a lake. And Livira is a heckin' smart, heckin'
Her perception's very high.
She's definitely got main character syndrome. She doesn't back down from stuff. If she feels like she's being slighted, she's gonna.
But I like it.
I do. There's a capriciousness to her that is very endearing when she's
Precocious.
precocious. There we go. That was the P word I was looking for. She's very precocious.
What's nice is instead of her getting like petty in certain moments or like or not petty, she is doing things that I wish characters would do in certain moments if they were intelligent enough to do it, and she's supposed to be intelligent enough to do it, so it's fun. And he really it comes off naturally at the beginning, in my opinion. Yeah, very much main character syndrome, but it's like, oh, but this is fun. I like having a kid, like, because all the other stuff going on around her is really awful. So it's kind of nice to have a little bit of agency. Otherwise, it would be just depressing.
Yeah, and she is an active character, which is nice. She does a lot of things that shape her narrative. And like that's nice. Some people found her kind of Mary Sue-ish, I think, but I never
Yeah,
quite.
it didn't really hit there for me. It got close, but it didn't hit.
Yeah, it didn't really annoy me. The only thing that really annoyed me about her was her like magic pixie dream girl stuff later in the book.
She gets into a fist fight with one kid because she found a scrap of paper. She doesn't know how to read. Nobody in the settlement really knows how to read, but she finds a scrap of paper with writing on it, printed writing, and she's like, wow, this is so heckin' cool. And some boy tried to take it from her. They get into a fist fight, and then she's like talking. Her parents are dead. They died when she was younger. She is living with her aunt. There is a well that slowly is losing its water level, and they keep having to extend the length of the bucket. And you very much get the idea of a kind of roughness to this life. But we don't spend a lot of time here because very quickly the Sabas attack. One day, coming through the dust is a group of people, and at first they think they're humans because, per the first part of the book, they look mainly humanoid until you notice their legs, and
And then
as they get
also they have
closer.
a fine sprinkling of hairs on them, aka fur. Why can't you just call it fur? But unless it's not supposed to be fur. And it is supposed to just be really fine, numerous hairs, in which case I don't know what I'm picturing. Really, the biggest problem was is that later on in the book, and I don't mean to interrupt you, Maria, but this is a point I wanted to make, and you're talking about the physical characteristics of them. Later on in the book, it's described that Ivar's language as a Saba, not Saba, we'll get to, is like growling and stuff. And then the human language, when he tries to speak it, is like kind of hard to like use with his mouth. And so I'm like, does he have a muzzle? I don't understand. Is he more dog than person, or is he more person than dog? And I don't know. I just don't know.
I think some of it is kept overly vague because he wants to be able to have the twist later. And I think that kind of makes the descriptions a little bit weird sometimes because he's trying to hide that twist.
I guess, but it just doesn't work for me. I was very con I didn't know what to picture in my brain.
Yeah, and so Science Fantastic says, I guess they're just furry men with however you say that,
Digitigrade. I have to talk about that a lot as a Warhammer fan.
Sava's attack, they take a bunch of the children and they're like, you're mine now, we're taking you, and they tie them up and they got them like on a string of rope. The one kid's got a cough, they've got some young kids, and Lavira, being Lavira, who we've established is heckin' spunky and precocious, literally goes, are you going to eat us? And the Saba goes, in her language, are you good to eat? And it is described as a sarcastic comment.
I love that. I love how much Lavira is emotionally intelligent in this moment, or like just perceptive. It's because she's like, he said it in the way that most people would say it if it were sarcastic, not as in a matter of fact, true question, but she wasn't sure because she wasn't used to their mannerisms. And I was just like,
one thing this book does that's actually, and we get this comment a lot, is like, oh, you're not supposed, like, we get this about Iron Widow a lot and other ones, like, oh, you're supposed to understand that the character isn't seeing things objectively, and like, how would the author tell you that they're doing bad things if it's in their viewpoint? There's also some discussion about this about the Kingkiller Chronicles, where people were like, oh, but you know, it's all from his viewpoint, and like that kind of stuff. And the thing is, this book is very good at, and shows how you can show things to the reader that the character does not necessarily agree with or think about. So throughout the whole book, there's all this stuff, everyone is constantly talking about how terrible the Saba are, but you can tell up until the twist even that, like, oh no, they're actually another intelligent species, and like, there's just a lot of racism going on, or racism, as is trademarked for this podcast. And so it's done through like this little comment that's like very clearly like, oh, he has a sense of humor and he's smart. There's also certain expectations. We understand the writer isn't gonna make them like a dog person. And it's interesting because that can be something of a, one thing that sometimes happens in the Trump era is that I've noticed is that people can limit other people's evilness by their lack of imagination. And so often we'll be like, oh no, nobody could be that bad. So like in Iron Flame and in Fourth Wing, we kept talking about how the author must know that the War College is really bad and like is eugenicsy and bad, but like that is actually never borne out by the text. In this case, it is borne out by the text. We give them the benefit of the doubt that like racism is bad, and then it's proven true later, but we don't have to wait two books for it.
This is such a great, well, I'm so glad you brought this up, because it really is a fantastic example that you can have the character thinking a thing, but you, through telling the book, even from the character's point of view, show the reader that the character is wrong. Like, it is entirely possible. You don't have to have the character believing everything that the character, that the, like, you don't have to be right there with them to be like, oh, well, that's accurate to their point of view. No, you can trust your reader to paint a landscape where the reader can go, oh, no, this is fucking,
and
the
that's where people get angry.
So let's talk, like, real techniques, because I was paying attention, because, you know, we got to be specific on this podcast. We don't just survive off of vibes like other ones. I was watching a lot of booktubers and they annoy me. Okay, so like that sarcastic comment, that's a good way of being like, oh, the character is taking it, the character inwardly kind of thinks a thing, but outwardly is like, no, that's not the thing. That's one way of doing it. Later, Yute, who is a character that we respect and is deputized by the narrative as the moral and smart person, he's like, I don't think they're that bad. So that's another way you can do that. Another book that actually did that was The Poppy War. Towards the end, there's a character who has been shown as good who's like, you kind of committed a war crime. What's up with that? And even though the main character is like, no, I didn't, it clues you in as the reader. Again, there's the fact that we know racism is bad, so we just assume that this trope is going to be subverted later. And it is. Other books, it's not. But that kind of gives you some time in there. And I think in general, it's also, for example, shown that everybody's really racist towards the dust people. So you get the sense that like, oh, this is a culture where there's a lot of racism.
The dog fuckers is what they call them.
Yeah, and so those are all ways that the author can be like, this is what's going on, guys. Not like, yeah, and to distance the narrative and talk to the reader without the character fully espousing a view, I guess.
Angry Otter brings up the point, which is, I think you can run into the issue where it's so obvious to the reader that the character's assumption is wrong that you get annoyed with them for not getting it. I do think we hit that point a little bit with Levira in this book. We were talking about, but I think there are points at which you can do it really well.
Yeah.
And for the most part, outside of when it just, and honestly, in those parts, it feels just like he made Levira dumb all of a sudden.
Yes.
But I think for the most part, you can do this thing. You can show that this is a bad thing, even if your main character is a bad character. Because one of the complaints we had in Iron Widow was that the character is doing some problematic stuff, but the narrative is never like, this is problematic. And people who defended it were like, well, it's from her point of view. She doesn't think she's doing anything wrong. And like, you can do both. It is entirely possible for a narrative.
Now, the question becomes then, are you a skilled enough writer to be able to do that? If you're not, fair enough. And if you tried, good job. But it's not a successful...
I don't think it's hard.
I think it's very hard. Well, you have to remember, a lot of these people that are publishing, such as Fourth Wing and stuff, like, how many things had they written and gotten peer-reviewed? Like, if they have gotten a shit ton of peer review, and they've been giving critique, and they've been like, oh, okay, I realize I've been doing these things wrong, let's build on it. That's one thing. And if you're still repeating that same issue, then obviously there's issues. You'd be fired if it were your job.
I think, first of all, Fourth Wing is a weird example because that lady has written a ton of books. But I think in the examples I'm thinking of, I think it's a genuinely held view of the author. Fourth Wing, I really don't think the author understands how problematic the whole Full Metal Jacket training camp is. In Iron Widow, I don't think the author fully understands how many war crimes her character is committing, or that it's not okay.
But that's the other side of the coin. You know, like, that's not just then, oh, you're a struggling writer. That just is, you're a struggling human being.
Right, but I don't think it's that hard to write necessarily. I think in the cases that we're looking at.
I see what you're saying.
But yeah, that was just something I wanted to talk about because we do get a lot of comments about that.
So, they're in their trail, like, they've got the rope trail leading the kids away somewhere, and then in they hear a thwack and an arrow comes, kills one of the kids, and then suddenly there's a battle between the Sabas and some human people who are like, we're here to kill Sabas, but they also like don't really care about the kids. Like, after they've killed after the Sabas have run off and one of them was killed, they like tie the kids and they're like, follow, and there's a decision made that the injured soldiers will take the kids back to the city, and the ones who are Haler are gonna go on, and one of them is this guy who has this giant cut down his face from where one of the Sabas got him, and it's an open wound at this point. They're in the desert a long time. The fact that didn't get infected is wild to me. But anyway, and this guy, everybody is really, like, respecting. And our little spunky, inquisitive Levira can't stop asking questions. And she's like, where are we going? Why do you have a cut on your face? Why was everybody congratulating you? What are you doing? And then he was like, shut the fuck up.
I love this entire... He's my... before you said Valente, because he is best boy, but prior to that, I was going to say Malah was, like, literally the best character.
He's Malah. A very kind of stock character of, like, the hardened veteran who has, like, a heart of gold, but it's tough. But yeah, it's a strong one. He's still a fun character.
He's so funny. But anyway, eventually, as they continue to travel and there's less water and less food, she starts to get some questions out of, like, answers out of these guys, and basically, Malar was congratulated because he killed a Saba, and apparently he's just really good at killing things. And then she's like, well, if you're so good and you're the only one who has done it, why aren't you in charge? And he's like, yeah, that's not how that shit works. And so they take them into the city, and basically he's like, we're gonna take you to get allocated.
Yeah.
Is that what it was? Yeah. For allocation.
And I want everyone to know, during this sequence of events when they're walking through the city, none of the kids have been in a city before. They're being, like, spat at by super racist people. And they're being, like, pushed around, and they're starving and thirsty, and some of them can barely walk. And then, to top it all off at one point, because Levere's asking too many questions, Malah shoves her into a horse trough.
So it's really, because you get the idea that the people that come from the dust, the dusters, are these lesser group of people to the city people. And they have some, like, physical features that are a little bit different, just kind of like as if it's, like, a different, like, region And they're getting a lot of flack, and they're also like, the kids are literally coated in dust. They ain't never taken a bath in their life. And at first you think when Malar shoves her into the horse trough that he's being a dick because she asked a question.
Yeah. I mean, he is still being a dick,
Yes,
but
he's like, we're going to take you to allocation. And he leads up the majority of the kids and he tells her to hide behind him as they're going up these steps. And it's basically like a building with like these big steps with multiple doors. And he leads up the majority of the kids to the first door and he says, he tells Lavira to stand behind him and not to fucking move, to just stand there. And she starts trying to ask questions and he's like, shut the fuck up. And he hits her. In this moment, he like slaps her, like backhands her across the face to get her to be quiet. They're going up a door because your kind only gets to be sewer cleaners and servants and like the worst jobs. And you're smart enough that you can go into a different one. So shut the
like at
fuck
least
up.
door number three. We can at
Yeah.
least try to get you into door number three.
And that's is also because she had saved his life in the desert against like a squid.
They call them
A
sand
desert
bears.
bear. Oh yeah, sand bear. Yeah, I was not expecting a tentacle monster when they called it a sand bear, but I guess that makes sense.
It's the monster from Tremors, if anybody has watched that incredibly old movie.
Yes, she basically jumps in its mouth and like cuts it up with things on the inside to save Malar's
She's
life.
pretty badass in that moment. I thought actually at that point that she was going to be a warrior at some point, and that's what was going to happen.
I legitimately thought he was going to take her and be like, "You've got the stuff, kid. Let's
Yeah.
go." No, not what
I'm
happened.
actually a little disappointed that didn't happen.
It would have been a completely different book. Anyway, so he's like, "So I'm gonna take you to door three, so you can maybe be like, that you can get a job in a nice house, kind of thing." And he puts one of his spare robes around her, and he wears a black robe, so that her yucky duster clothing can't be seen underneath it. And she's like, okay, so she starts walking up the stairs and she sees this one girl who's like dressed nicely and looks beautiful, and she kind of thinks of as a princess.
My favorite character.
Yeah, duh. And the girl's like sneering at her and she's like, bitch, you're gonna sneer at me? I'm gonna walk into your door, motherfucker.
I love that
Just keep
shit.
going
I love
up
it.
to the third door. She's like, no, fuck you, I'm gonna come to you door. So she comes up to the first door, which is not the door she was supposed to be going into, and there's like a guy in a white robe being like, make your argument for why I should have let you in here, because he immediately is like, you don't look like this is your door. And so she has a perfect memory, what is it
Eidetic.
called, eidetic?
Eidetic,
Yeah.
yeah. And so she speaks back what the Saba said when it first came to her village, which was basically, and she doesn't know what she's saying at this point, but it's basically,
She was trying to be tough.
she just said something. She wanted to shock, you know, she, and
Yeah.
the shockiest thing she had was what she heard the Saba say. And she says in Sabbatine, which is the Saba language, you are mine. Do not fight, for I will beat you, kind of
No,
thing.
it was kind of like everything that is here is now mine, is what it was, something to that effect.
But specifically at the end, it was something about her, like, if you fight, you shall be like
Yes.
I will fight you. And so the guy's like, fam fucking. And so they let him in, or they let her in. And also, so I should also say that the guy in the white coat lets her in specifically because a guy in a dark gray coat who is white AF, like white hair, white eyelashes, red eyes, so albinism, is like, no, let her in. And they're like, okay, master, we'll do that. And she goes in, and there's a couple of tables set up, and you're supposed to go to each table and talk to the people. And at the first table, Lavira is about to show a mathematical sense that we will never see get used ever again.
I know. I was so angry. Oh God, guys, everyone watching, I want you all to know, anytime there is a scene where there's a character who's really smart in a weird way that's like not typical, shows off how smart and amazing they are, I get hot and bothered. And when that's not used again, I get hot and bothered, but in a different way. And that happened here. Also, can I just say I wanted to punch every single person's mouth in this scene. God, I hate it when this shit happens where they're like, oh, she just is like, you, what, did they not check? Anyway, continue. I'm sorry.
The thing about it is that it's interesting because this scene made me root for her instead of annoying me at the author. And that's a problem that very commonly comes up on this channel. And that's kind of what I mean by when I talk about how this book is actually very decently written in that there's a lot of stuff that does work about the novel in a way that it doesn't in other ones. Like, it kind of makes sense. Like, okay, she has this memory and she has this mathematical ability or whatever. Okay, they're gonna, you know, there's a reason for why they're kind of playing along with this, at least for a little bit.
Ah, there it is. Laura said it, by the way. What she says in Sabatine is, "All of this is mine now, and I will accept your surrender."
When she goes in, the thing you realize is that while she has a really great understanding of math on a conceptual level innately, she does not know the terms. So they ask her to multiply two numbers, and she's like, "I have no idea what that means." And she doesn't. And so she asks, "What does that mean?" And they're kind of intrigued by her question. And eventually, the guy realizes that she doesn't know what the word multiplication means or divide. So he asks the question again, but in a different way that would make sense to her.
You're making him sound very nice. What happened was she doesn't know what multiplication is. They're like, "Oh, she obviously doesn't belong here." Then one of the kids on the side is like, "Oh, they count in beans. You have to tell them to count in beans." And so the guy, being further racist, is like, "Okay, say you have so many beans in this," and then that's how she figures it out.
No, because when he realizes, so he does use beans as an example, and it is kind of, but he d also realizes that I need to say this in a way, because it
That she
should have been like, "What
understands.
is 5 beans divided by this many beans?" Like, that wouldn't have helped her. He would have still been using the language she doesn't understand. So he does specifically
That
say,
does come up, though.
no, what he says is, "You have 150,000 beans,
Yes.
and you have 8 people it needs to get split between. How many beans do each of them get?" So he isn't saying divide. He realizes she doesn't know what that means, and he puts it into a conceptual way she understands. So while he is using beans, like, he does change the language to allow for her.
What I'm trying to say is that everyone's being a dick to her, and still, nonetheless, she shows up.
So she knows the math. He asks another question. She's able to do that. So she gets to move from the math table to the next table. And at the next table, she has to read a book. She can't. They then ask her, because, like, the lady kind of realizes, "Ah, you're smart enough where if you can write, you can probably, like, be a house reader or something like that." And asks her to write her name, and she can't. Like, she's never held a quill before. And so what she does is she just starts writing the figures that she memorized off of the scrap of paper that she pulled. And they were like, "This is a, oh, like, what? How do you even know this text? She's obviously mimicking something." And Yu comes up and is basically like, "Yo, this girl is an uncut gem. She obviously has never written. You can see that her print gets better the more she does it. She's obviously got a great memory that she's been able to memorize this scrap of paper and do this. Her math skills are great." And they end up asking the girl who was a bitch to her outside to do the same math problem she did, and she doesn't remember the answer, and she can't do it as quickly as Livira did. She could do it, you know, probably if she worked it out, but Livira just did it in her head. They're talking, and this one guy comes. His name is Lord Algar, and he's a real dick. And he was like, "Get this girl out of her to a door where she belongs, and she doesn't belong in this." And Yute's like, "You know, she has a lot of things that could potentially be good for a diplomat." And he was like, "How dare you disgrace the diplomat?" And so Yute's like, so Livira gets kicked out, and she's really angry. Millar's not there anymore, and Yute comes after her, and he's kind of slow, and he's like, "Yo, wait up." And she's like, she's mad at him because she feels like she's been made fun of, and like, he was, because somebody said as she's leaving, Ute's experiments are sometimes not the greatest. And she was like, "I don't want to be an experiment for no one. Fuck you." And he was like, "Nah, follow me. I don't worry, I got you." And he takes her to her house. She meets this nice lady named Salamunda who makes her really yummy food. They have a cat named Wentworth. Salamunda is Ute's cook. Ute's, she thinks Ute's house is the library.
Oh, which is so cute, isn't it? But no, wait, Chantel made a really good point. I just want to point out before we move on in the plot. In those moments where she stood up for herself, I like how the author included a few brief moments where her confidence wavers. It felt more realistic, like her cleverness isn't bulletproof.
Little things and little asides and little emotional reactions like that can add a lot. It's something I noticed when me and Maria were reading The Keys to the Kingdom, which has a very a distant narrative feel to it, and to the characters. But one of the things that makes the characters feel real is they do have, like, these little realistic thoughts, like, "Oh, this would," or their confidence wavers in that way. And that is a step ahead of a lot of the books we've read, where the characters are just very flat and don't have those, like little ripples or eddies in the water, so to speak.
Yeah.
With food, I don't even know how Kay would explain this. Maybe the syrup is
okay. Continuing. Anyway, so you basically takes her to the library and is like, congratulations, you're now a trainee in the library. Maybe you'll be a librarian one day, or a house reader, or whatever the case is. And Ute is apparently famous for doing this. He's one of the deputy librarians, so he's in the, there's like the head librarian, and then underneath is the four deputy librarians. And he basically just apparently brings in people who aren't placed here by the allocation people, but he just gets to bring whoever he decides should be in this program. He just gets to bring them to the library.
Once you realize his real position there and everything, it makes a lot of sense.
And the head instructor is like, because Livia immediately starts asking questions, and he's like, oh God, you Utelings, you always ask all the questions. And obviously you get the idea that Ute is cultivating minds that he sees other people are not taking seriously because of whatever background they're coming from. And so you get the idea that Ute is not prejudiced. He is immediately, and this is a point that Will was making earlier, he's immediately set up as a character who is a good moral authority. And so when he says something is maybe not great, you're like, ah, even though our main character thinks it is, it probably isn't, which is, you know, good move. Basically, what's going to happen for our girl Livira for the next little bit is she's going to learn how to become a librarian. She's going to learn how to read, and she's going to make friends. Cut. Meanwhile, stuck somewhere in the library, hidden in doors that cannot be open, we have Ivar, who is a guy trapped in a library. He's like 20-something, and he's like, yo, life sucks. I only have my siblings, who aren't actually my siblings. Let me tell you, that when they first were like, him and Clovis slept together, good thing they're not actually sisters. I was like, Jesus, what are you talking about? And basically, what you learn is that in the middle of this chamber that they live in is a mechanism. And the mechanism is basically a kind of room that you can go into, and it will bring the book you bring in with you to life around it. And the
AKA the holodeck, as one of our lovely patrons mentioned.
His siblings, who he's not actually related to, are five children who have all been trapped in the mechanism for a period of time. And basically what happened is anyone could go, their people have been trapped in this chamber of the library for centuries. And every once in a while, someone would go into the chamber, a child would go into the mechanism and just never come out. Like, suddenly the door's open, there's no kid in there, other people can go in, but people liked using the mechanism so much. It was, I mean, they're stuck in a giant library chamber, there's not much to do, I imagine the mechanism.
Well, not just that, but also, like, I mean, yeah, actually, that's a good enough point in and of itself, but also everything that you go through in the mechanism, you learn inherently, so it's like, I mean, how stellar
is that? No, not normally. That's only happened to them because they were in there for like a very long time. That's not what happens to other people.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Five kids got, over a period of time, got trapped in the mechanism. The first one, I think, was Carl? Carol?
Wasn't it Carl? Ivar? Wasn't it Ivar?
Yeah, maybe Ivar. Ivar was first.
Ivar's the oldest out of all of them.
I honestly kept getting them all confused except for Clovis.
Oh, no. I didn't have a problem with him because I hated all of them.
And basically, each of these kids went in with a different book, but nobody knows, even though we know what the other people's books are, nobody knows what Ivar's book was. And also, they don't know how long they were in there, but they all came out the same age that they were when they went in. And so they do understand, though, based on the fact that Clovis was the people that she was part of were decimated when she went in and had talked about the other children who went missing, that this was like when Ivar first went in, that was potentially like 150 years ago. So it's been at different periods. And so when they all came out, all of the kids had an deep, complete understanding of the books they went in with. Clovis went in with a book about war and fighting and warfare, and so she is an excellent fighter and a tactician, and like she just is ready for a war. She also was put in very violently, like she didn't go in of her own accord. She was thrown into the mechanism when the Saba attacked and her people were killed, and her mother threw her in to save her life and ended her up throwing her in there with a book about warfare that her mother did not realize was about warfare, and it turned her into a little like, she not only wants revenge for the death of her people, but she has the knowledge to enact it, which is a powerful combo. Then his brother Starvel went in with a book about assassination and espionage and killing people. And so Starvel is excellent killer who has never killed anyone.
Ninja.
Ninja, basically, and is, of the group, the best developed. Of the group of siblings, he has some depth to him. Then we have Carol, who is the tallest of them, and he went in with a psychology book, so he is always just manipulating his siblings. He immediately, like, if they're upset, if they're sad, he can look at them and then deduce what has happened. Like, his psychology on like level 500, you know?
Yeah, it's also not how actual psychology works, which is the funny part. Like, it's not like if he went in with Sigmund Freud, he would understand that much. And the thing about it is, there's an interesting idea that, because Evar didn't go in with a book, he just kind of doesn't even really remember what happened in his life. And so he's the second best to all of them at the thing. And there's this interesting idea of them kind of locked in this abusive family situation where they love and hate each other. But I actually never really felt it. Like, I felt like the author kept telling us that, but there's not enough interactions where, like, they're actually friendly and they like each other, and then all of a sudden they don't, and you get a sense for being stuck with someone. And that's kind of one of the things that I think the book does a lot. The book will bring up a really interesting idea and it'll talk about it a little bit, but you won't necessarily feel it. And, like, that's going to come up when we talk about the themes.
Like, with Levira later on, it seemed like the author really hit the nail on the head when it came to that portrayal and everything at the beginning. But the more it seemed like he tried to shove into this book quicker to get to that whole, oh, Ivar and Levira, mwah, mwah. the sooner we got to that part, the more it felt like it was losing its depth.
And I'll say, honestly, this whole Eva part, I don't think it needs to exist. I think it should just be cut entirely. I think all of the information in it could just be told through dialogue to Levira while they're bonding. Like, I just don't feel like actually seeing these characters on the page was actually interesting enough to warrant the amount of pages
it takes. But see, what I'm thinking is that based off of what it seems like the author wanted to do, I think Ivar needs to be included. But if then that's the case, then less Levira, more Ivar, and then Ivar.
And better plot for,
yes,
Ivar? A plot?
Yeah, a plot in general for Ivar. Like, it just, it really feels like, God, it kind of feels like this, like the author wrote everything from Levira's perspective to begin with, and then was like, ah, but, like, I want this other thing to happen, and then, like, or, like, wanted romance in it or something. I don't know. It was kind of, it really felt weird.
I will argue the Will point, which is, I think he could have done it just from Levira's point of view. I don't think Ivar's point of view is necessary until the last third of the book.
So what you're saying is the content of his material towards the beginning is pointless, which, yes, I agree with, which is why there should be plot, a whole, like a whole brand new thing input into
it. I think
it'd
be more interesting just from her point of view. I don't know why authors do this. I've noticed it a lot. Authors really like to include points of view from characters that don't need to be there. Like, the thing is that there is, you know, we are all alone in the world, and so we only ever see things from our point of view, and there's a subjectivity and a certain amount of atmosphere that comes from that that gets punctured when you're then in somebody else's head seeing how they interact with it. And it's just much more interesting to be like, oh, there are things Levira isn't really understanding, and there's all this stuff going on. And I think it would have helped with the mismatched tone of, like, she's in a real city and he's, like, doing his Piranesi thing but not as good.
Yeah, no, I usually dislike books that switch perspective. Every single book that we have read so far where there's been a switch in perspective, whether it's good or bad, I've disliked because of the switch in perspective. I don't like multiple perspectives. That being said, it still can be really, like, done really well, and it's just not. Again, all the Levira material up until she becomes, you know, of proper age, doesn't, it's all really good and fun and interesting, and I wanted more of the politics of the city at that point because it felt like there was a lot invested into that idea, and then we're just not given it, and it just, it really feels rushed. And don't even, I mean, we're not there yet. I have so much dislike for the ending of this book.
It's, like, a mess, and I literally just stopped paying attention at a certain point, too, because I just, It was just like, there's a fire. We get it. Okay, there's some time stuff. I knew it was going to be the two of them the whole time. Like, whatever. Like,
Ivar, his big thing is he's the only one that has been really, they've all kind of looked for a way out, but he is doggedly because
that's all. We see what you did there.
It was
that
not
wasn't
on
gonna get
purpose.
past us.
He's like, you know, I don't know what my purpose was. I don't know what my thing was that I learned that I'm the best at. And he's like, but it's a person, and it's a, I think it's a woman. And he's like, I need to find this person that is my missing purpose. This is my purpose, and I need to get out of this library to find them. And so he's like trying to going through the stacks, trying to do the stuff. There are doors, but the doors won't open, and he can't figure out how to open them. And then one day he is doing stuff, and there are these things called escapes that come out of the mechanism, and they're these like black
I
monstery
still don't
things.
understand what they are.
They're the blood of the library working for Jaspeth. Like, Katie, how do you not understand? Like, it's very clear.
I still don't understand. I
Yeah.
still don't understand.
That part was a little, but anyway, we'll get there. He's trying to do stuff. There's some escapes happening. There's a lot of escapes at once, and he ends up having like a frustrated moment after the escapes attack, and he ends up like hitting a stack of books, and it falls over. And then a book kind of in this aftermath of the falling stack, and it was a really big stack, like it was massive, like tree. And he finds a very plain brown book that has kind of something etched in it, but it's kind of worn away, so he can't really see it. He can't tell what the thing is, and he's like, wow. And he picks it up, and he opens, and his sister grabs it from him, because immediately Clovis can tell that it's something he's interested in, and she takes it, and he's like, oh, you won't even be able to read it. It's in a language we can't speak. But he opens it, and on the first page it says, he can read it. It says, Ivar, don't turn the page. I'm in the exchange. Find me at the bottom. And he's like, what the fuck? And he's like, oh my god, this is a piece of my missing puzzle. What the heck? Oh my god, heckin' mysteries. And then he's determined, finding this makes him determined, because he's like, I need to get to the bottom, but there is no bottom. Maybe there's chambers underneath me, so I need to get out again. And there's a giant wall of like charred books on one side, where obviously there was a giant fire and a huge, very thick stack of books, like a massive wall of books was the fire block. And they burnt, but they kept it from spreading to the rest of the chamber. And he had, when he was younger, dug a tunnel underneath this and got to the door. And so he's trying that again. And as he's trying to get through that, the soldiers, so there's two people that are also in there with them. They're not really people, they're called assistants. The one is assistant, and the other one's the soldier. And the assistant is just kind of vaguely female shaped, but like an ivory, like, robot-y lady
Robot.
who,
Yeah.
and then the soldier is like that, but more masculine in feature and has a sword and is a really good fighter. Like, Clovis and Starvel might be really good, but like none of them have ever beat the soldier, so he's a heckin' good. And the assistant has kind of been like their mother figure, and like isn't nurturing in most ways, but has taken care of them. And same with the soldier. Like, there's points where like the soldier is like, they have a field of crops, like a little where they plant things and there's seeds.
The feeling is that there's something more going on inside of them that comes to the surface sometimes. Like, the assistant held him once when he was sick. But like, they're also just automatons. And the book will try to sell it like he's actually very attached to them, but I didn't really feel it. And so he decides, like, hey, there's a well here. Maybe that's what they mean by at the bottom. So he goes underwards and he comes out in. I saw this as that place in the Chronicles of Narnia in the third book, I think, where, or no, the first book chronologically, where like there's a bunch of pools that lead to different worlds, and that's kind of what it is. It's like a big forest, and there's a bunch of pools everywhere. And he's like, "Oh my God, I've read about books, but I've never seen them before."
Read about books?
I'm sorry, trees. I've read about
Okay.
trees, but I've never seen them before.
There we go.
What?
I was like, I don't think you said that right. But yeah, and he's like, wow, this is so cool. And then as he's walking around, he sees this one pool is kind of dark, and there's a hand coming up through it. And he reaches in and he pulls it out. And then we go back to Lavir's view really quick. At this point, Liviera has been training. She knows how to read now. Her handwriting's still not that good. She asks lots of questions. She's made a gaggle of friends, and her gaggle of friends have been sent into the actual library because she thought the training library was the library, but it wasn't. They've been sent into the actual library to try to find a book because this one guy who's a dick wants Liviera out of there and is trying to get her out of there by having them find an impossible book. So her and her friends go into the library. They're like, "Be careful not to wander off too far. You can get lost and die in here." And she's like, "I don't give a shit about your rules or your systems. I shall go where I want." And she literally, like, they're like, "Liviera, don't." And she's like, "I'm not doing anything. I'm just..." And then she, like, bolts. Because she decides she's going to go find an assistant, because they talk about how there are assistants in the library who aren't super helpful. But, like, she's like, "Oh my gosh." And so she runs, she finds a labyrinth, she gets lost in the labyrinth.
There is this entire, there is more space on a page written about her struggles climbing a singular bookshelf than there is in Ivar's character development. I mean, look, I enjoyed that. I enjoy the little, like, details of how she's struggling. Lavera's the only person who treats the library like it's a legit playground.
Here's the thing about it is that in Piranesi, the museum place he's in feels like a real ecosystem. Like, it's flooding at parts, there's things on the top, there's birds, let's never forget the gulls who said hi to him and he didn't have time to talk to you that one time. And I never really got that sense from the library that actually this is like an enclosed ecosystem onto itself. And I think maybe the author wasn't necessarily trying to go for that. He was going for more of like an eternal, untouched place. But, like, later there was mentioned that there's basically wildfires going through the library constantly. And, like, that's such a cool idea. And, like, we just don't really interact with it a lot more than
I mean, wouldn't it have been interesting if she had, because there's this one concept that's later on explained to us that the library is, like, basically forever. And there are sections of the library that only certain species from certain worlds or certain eras or whatever can open. And I mean, I don't know how you would have explored this part. I mean, I guess an assistant. It's because assistants are supposed to be able to open any door. But, like, it's mentioned that at all times the library is burning someplace. And I guess that's a very cool, like, concept of the idea that, like, it's like you were saying, it's an ecosystem basically, and from the death there is rebirth, but unfortunately the rebirth is secular and people keep killing each other over and over again. Like, that's cool and all, but it felt very unfinished. And actually, I didn't get to mention this before. It's because, well, actually, I don't even know how I didn't get to mention this before. It's because this is literally the thesis of my entire feelings on this book. This book made me depressed, and listening to it made me want to, like, literally die. And I hated listening to this book. I never want to listen to it again.
Why?
Katie has huge problems with time and the cyclical nature, and nothing matters, and nothing is unique.
Yes, I have that problem too.
So there's also, like, so there's books like Piranesi where it's kind of vaguely like that, but it's more, like, at peace with itself. So it's easier on, like, the open wound that is my, like, depression. But in this book, it's very much like a sharp knife where it's like it's constant, we're constantly wounding each other, we're constantly, like, bleeding out. And God, I hated the I hate the concept of forever. Like, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean, but this for me did not was not sufficiently good to trigger it.
Well, that's what actually hurts me even more, is that if it's good enough, then I feel kind of like, oh, this is poetic. This is really good. Like, so Japanese media loves to target this particular theme, the idea of, like, people's connections over time and all that stuff. And as Maria and I call it, the Japanese ending for things, it's because, like, it's like, oh, even though you're dead, our hearts will always be with each other. It's like, no, screw that.
You know, the beauty of the transient moment thing, that concept that I forget the name of.
Like you're saying, no, I don't, like, there was something, like, it felt like a blanket that was really pretty, but that had a whole bunch of stray little thread pieces everywhere poking out, so it didn't look as pretty as it could have. So it just, it looks messy rather than, like, a beautiful tapestry. And that's the way I felt about the concept or the theme of this.
Wait, 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 wait. What did you just say?
Tapestry, beautiful tapestry.
It's tapestry.
Who cares? Oh my God.
The bad dream you have at night. What's that called?
A nightmare?
Okay, good. Some people say nightmare, and that's really weird.
So real quick, Angry Otter makes the point. Is this a case of too many things or just mismanaging the things that are there? I am going to make the argument that it's mismanaging the things that are there. There is a little bit of too many things towards the latter half. There is definitely a bit of too many characters at a certain point. Like, there's so many characters, and I don't feel like they get as much attention as they should. And I think kind of thinning the herd, especially because like Ivar's side doesn't get, like, there's not a lot of characters, and yet they're not developed at all.
So the next big thing that happens is that Eva and Lavera meet, because Lavera is running from something and she jumps into a thing, and at this point she is a small child and he is like, oh hey, what's up, child? And she's like precocious, and this was the moment where I was like, who is this bitch? Like, all of a sudden she comes off like less like I'm kind of questioning the world around me and like I don't stop asking questions, and like more like Manic Pixie Dream Girl. And obviously not right now because she's a child, but those tendencies grow. And it's a very male author coded way of writing a female character,
which is so weird, because prior to this, in her perspective, she did not get portrayed like Ivar is the same way. Later on, when we get from Lavera's perspective of Ivar as his normal self, he doesn't seem like the Ivar we were also told. So it's not just a female thing, it's also just like a portrayal of character thing.
Yeah, there's a mismatch between the dialogue and the internality, I think. And look, I get it, I also like that kind of a female character, but it just felt a little out of place.
I can see someone making the argument that that's the point. Their perceptions of each other is not like...
Well, no, that, I think that's
like
a fault.
This whole... Yes. And the thing is, I think you could have done it better where maybe they eventually see how they actually are on the inside. You know when you first meet someone and you take the thing they're doing the wrong way, and then you get to know them and you're like, oh, I completely misread that. Like, my boyfriend thought I was really cool and independent and smart and real, like, real... Real cool.
No, you shut the fuck up. Yes, you are.
No, I am a giant potato. Like, I'm a squishy bean.
Everyone, she's lying.
People are always more insecure and less adult than you think they are when you meet them. This is a thing I just had to learn about people.
But also, Maria is 85% normal functioning adult.
Well, she's more like grandma, and so I think people read that as functioning adult, but she really just skipped that stage towards, I decorate like a grandma.
I'm also a baby.
It's also that she has older sibling syndrome. She older siblings literally everyone. So
but no, it's totally true. It's the Darcy thing. Sometimes you misjudge people the first time you meet them, or you get a different sense for them as you grow. No, that actually would have been a really interesting thing.
If the author had to then reconcile that from that first meeting, they had a specific idea of who each other were, and then reconcile that that's not actually who it was. I mean, that would require them meeting each other at the same age a couple of times for them to actually, because like, unfortunately, she meets, we'll get there. Anyway, so... they have a conversation, and she's like, oh, and he was like, I've been stuck in a library with my siblings. And she was like, oh, I'm in the library adventuring and doing stuff. And she was like, what are you doing here? And he's like, I'm looking for the lady from my memory that I don't remember. And she was like, oh, your girlfriend, I hope you find her. And then Lavera gets pulled, like, she kind of goes back towards her pool, like they see that all the different pools and like the trees and blah, blah, blah. And then she falls back into her pool and she gets pulled through by the assistant. So when she goes into the portal, there was an assistant there whose hand was half into the thing, and the assistant is like just barely more alive, but it managed to pull in and take her out and be like, the exchange is forbidden to your kind. You cannot go in there. And so she gets pulled in. She tries to go back in, but she can't. And she's like, wow, I had a weird experience in this other place with a dude that apparently I'm the first person he's ever met before, ever. And then she goes back to her school stuff and she does some learnings. And then we have a time skip into the future.
So everyone, it does address why she doesn't tell everyone about the exchange. But does it not infuriate you that we didn't get the scene of her telling them, oh, by the way, and then disbelieving her? Like, it just glossed over, and I felt like that was such an important aspect.
That's not a scene I necessarily wanted, but you're kind of right that the book is missing, skips by some of those scenes to then just Bambi about with her friends, and like more of him just thinking about what order his brothers and sisters came out of the holodeck. Like, You're right that there's weird, like, missing scenes like that that it skips by, which would be okay in a shorter book, but in a book this long, it feels like weird that we're spending time on other things. And bear in mind, I listened to this at double speed. Like, this took half the time for me that it would for other people.
It's 22 hours. It's a chonky boy.
I listened to it at normal speed, this one.
Oh, I did 1.6. I could not have done.
Ooh. I already, like, struggle multitasking while driving, but that's, like, the only, like, I'm in an hour of traffic every morning and evening. So there's, like, no way I'm not going to listen to it, but I can't listen to it at two times while I'm looking at traffic.
I will say one day, I think I listened to about 4 or 5 hours of it in one go, and that it is readable. Again, we're spending a lot of time talking about the problems, but it does work as a whole.
We should point out more of the positive things. It really does.
It's super enjoyable. It's very readable or listenable, and it's also a bit bingeable. Like, you can pound away, like, at several points, and there is something really compelling about Lavera's, like, scrappy, I'm the underdog, and I'm gonna go into the library and become a librarian.
When she becomes a little older, too, we start getting fed more information about the city, such as the experimentations going on, which I thought were gonna be explored a little bit more, considering how dangerous it is.
There are actually, and going to our point about how this book is kind of decent, there are actually some really interesting ideas about how the library is used to mitigate power in the city, and the king only wants certain books published and not others, and if theoretically this is an infinite library, then you should just be able to write something and it exists somewhere in that whole monkey's tap ring however many times. Really, what's the point of finding the book if you could just write the book?
Yeah.
The thing about it, and the problem I had, is that this is all very cool, but we don't actually see it function in the city, because we're not actually in the city a lot. We're mostly just with her and her friends, so we don't really get a sense for the functioning of the culture.
This is where we have the too many things problem.
Wait, you gotta do a dance. You've been doing a dance the last two times.
It's too many things. You got too many things going on. And some of the things that you have going on, that is okay, because if those aren't too bad, you're not doing as well as you need to. And here it is. We are given this really fascinating concept of the politics of the city being led by denying certain things, only listening to books that agree with you, writing the books that will fuel what your politics are. But it is so periphery to the story that to lay that delicious nugget down at our feet and then to walk away from it and have it feel a little bit underdeveloped. There's also the idea of chemical warfare that comes up here, and the problem is it comes up where there's a point where her and a friend are exposed to a chemical explosion that is designed to kill her, and then later we see a chemical explosion that kills people, and I immediately was like, she needs to immediately think, did we do this? We had the I know we had the technology. And she doesn't even question it.
I know!
At all. That it is something that humans might have done, despite the fact that she has literally had that experience.
It did not make any sense.
This could have worked. All of these different things could have worked if this book, I think, had been split into two.
I was about to say that. The thing about this is that this is two different books, but go ahead and then I'll explain.
You have the development and her kind of turning into this human that is going to go on this adventure in the last third and kind of do this thing. And the other problem here is that this is already two books. This is book one of a duology, apparently. I think there's only two of them.
It's a trilogy.
It's a trilogy. Why don't we do standalone books? I'm so angry.
But this is what I was saying before. Once she turns to a certain age and it starts fast forwarding more and more and more, it felt like it was being it literally feels like me trying to, and if this one person who knows who they are listening to this episode, it feels like trying to shove a giant comforter into a washing machine or dryer, and it just won't fit. The chemical thing, by the way, side note, I wanted to say, it's really cool because in this one scene where they are attacked by a chemical weapon, they actually, like, almost die, and Lavera and her friend, as well as Malaw, have to, like, breathe in this one thing for them to even, like, remotely reverse the effects, plus their hair is bleached, and, like, their finger, or I don't remember all that's bleached, and I thought, oh, this is gonna be a really nice detail to have if this comes up again, too. Number one, I wanted her to have medical issues, number one. That's just a me thing, though. But also, number two, this entire time, these are all assassination attempts on Lavera's life because she's a duster, but she's in the city doing a respectable job. And this one dude that's like a prat wants to get rid of her. It's because, you know, like racism. And yes. And I'm sorry, he's a big old bad guy, but we never see, he never comes on screen again until the end for 5 seconds.
And there's a point where he gets humanized to Lavera, like where she realizes, oh, he's not just a cackling, he's a man who's fighting to preserve his relevancy in his world. And it happens off screen and she's just telling you this thing. And so it's weird because I think splitting this into two books and letting, and if Ivar had had, like, so either you take Ivar out as a point of view and then maybe have the second book from his point of view with a little bit of overlap, or you and then you just have this in Lavera's point of view, or you actually give Ivar something to do. And this book is just the development of getting them to the point where, like, this stuff is going to kick off for the second book. Because you're right, Algar is just a, like, he feels like a boogeyman there to give Lavera's life richness. Rather than someone within his own right. And then, again, there's that entire scene where she digests who he is, that he, his house has fallen on hard times, that he needs to create legitimacy in his heritage. Otherwise, because he's now poor, he has no fucking value. And that would shake up his entire world order and, like, that whole thing. And she realizes, oh, he's not a boogeyman. He is just a person with, who has some bad motivations, and, like, I don't like him, he's not likable, but, and I'm like, that would have been great for us to see.
Fundamentally, Maria's correct in that this is two different books, but they're all, it's also two different books thematically springing from the same idea. One of these books is, if there was an infinite library, how would that affect society in terms of, like, they have access to this knowledge but haven't reached a certain level of social development? How would this shape their political system?
That's so fantastic. That
one idea. And then the other idea is, if you had to live in this library on its own and there was a bunch of time magic and it had to do with never meeting anybody but your siblings and your siblings being defined by books because there's nothing else going on. And the thing is, those are two interesting ideas, but they don't come together. So mm-hmm. you're kind of left feeling each one is half fed.
But that being said, both are very awesome concepts. Yeah. Well, the first one's way more interesting, honestly. And how great would it have been if we had just gotten basically the first third slash half of this book, but for the whole book and Lavera? Like, that would have been really fun.
Also, the idea that society is learning things too quickly and has not mm-hmm. learned the lessons that come with organically learning the thing. Because, like Will said, the huge thing is they are able to do in 1,000 years what humanity took 10,000 years of learning and trial and error and building upon the mistakes of the past to do. They're just getting that information. So, like, they're going from, like, no electricity to electricity like that, very quickly. And the implications of what does that do? How you haven't learned the lessons of the power you're dealing with. You haven't faced the problems that come out of it because you're just getting the thing.
So, like, one example that I think is kind of interesting for is that societies develop different rules based off of how large they are. So they've done studies of this. There's four specific tiers, and I forget which ones they are, but, like, in early societies, you basically, everything is a familial relationship. There's no idea really of justice or not. It's like, if you kill my brother, I'll kill you. And it's, there's no sense of, like, oh, okay, this is good or bad, or one of us had a reason to or not. It's entirely reciprocal violence. And then as you, that stops working after you're after, you can't keep track of people's family relationships. And then so you need a certain amount of law involved. And then once you get a certain amount of law involved, you then get certain other morality concepts, and then you need a bureaucracy involved. And so, like, there is a way that societies develop based off of time. And so it would be fascinating if, like, okay, but before we even have a concept of justice, we have guns. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of technology they refer to as, like, in the military as, like, weapon systems, you know? Like, the reason certain militaries can use certain weapons, even though they had access to these weapons before, is because they only now have the training or combined arms to make them effective. Like, I was reading a lot about the Spanish Tercio, which is the pike and shot kind of formations, and how like that actually really only worked particularly well for Spain because it was a specific culture. And so like seeing a mismatch in those would be really interesting, but she's only ever in the library.
She has brief scenes outside of the library, but the majority of it is her in there and unraveling the mysteries of the library as this not sentient, but like infinite environment of knowledge, but where the books themselves are not necessarily immortal.
One of the things that they do talk about in terms of technology and we haven't mentioned is that the Saba are like they're massing outside this city. I forget what their city is called, and they're gonna invade. Crap. But they don't have, so like one of the big motivations for the library is like we got to find better weapons because the Saba just are inherently a lot stronger than humans, and then that will become key in a little bit.
Basically, our main character ends up being like 13. She finally gets back because like she wants to go back into the library, and she wants to like go back to the exchange and see Ivar and see if he like found stuff, like the person. And she starts writing. Yute tells her to kind of look at fiction, so she kind of starts writing her stories, and like she writes on bits of paper. In random books, she writes on like the title sheet or the like when you thank people, what, the acknowledgement sheets, and she starts writing stories on them. But eventually, at the age of 13, she finally is in the position. She follows this one librarian into the library who takes her to a place that has a mechanism, and she brings a book in with her. She has a bad experience, but she ends up in her fear in that moment.
This book that she brings in with her can magically summon darkness. That is like straight up just straight darkness. When you open the book, you can't see anything, and it moves with her while she has the book. Can other books do this? Like, I felt like that was a, what's it called? Chekhov's gun, is that what you call it? Yeah. Is that right? The right yes. term? That I just did not understand why there was only one book discovered that could do that, and it was never commented upon.
My theory is that the insect people that write this have to have darkness to read. Like, there's that the book itself is written in the darkness, not necessarily in the pages.
Man, that is some extrapolation, though. That
it
was
is,
never
but
explained.
It's pure Oof. Extrapolation. It's not. All you know is that it's a book that when you open creates a bubble of darkness, and that it is written. Eventually, she finds a mechanism. She goes into the mechanism and reads the book, and it's about these insectoid people and their war, and it's a terrible not. Very no good, very bad day. She comes out of it, and she's so scared in it that she summons the Raven, who was her guide when she first found the portal to get
which
to
we
the
haven't
exchange.
Mentioned at all. And also all these animal things, I'm like, Livira, how did you not notice that the Saba probably came before us, and this is probably an alien planet, and there probably are no humans that was originally, I don't know, that's what I was thinking at one point. I was like, The head of the library is a giant wolf. How does nobody understand that the Saba probably had this place first?
She ends up finding the portal. She has to move because she can't get into it because the assistant who was lying there, kind of dead, whose hand was in it. She figures out that it because of the assistant's hand is in it, she can't get into it. She moves the assistant, like dangles her into the air, gets into the exchange. Our boy is still in there. He had just gone. He decided to go into a different pool, and he saw his sister Clovis's the day the Sabas attacked, and she ended up going into the mechanism. Like, he got to experience that and see that happen. And it was super no good. He pops out of it, and he's like, wow, that was heavy shit. And then a 13-year-old girl pops out of nowhere and is like, hi! And he's like, why does this bitch know my name? Like, I don't know her. The last time I saw her, she was like 9. And she's like, it's me, Livira. Did you find your girlfriend? And he's like, no, and I don't know if she's my girlfriend. And then Livira in this moment is like, ah, I think these are, like, each of these pools goes to different places, blah, blah, blah. And they try to go in one together, okay?
Here's the plot hole Maria discovered. And the one that I did not understand, and maybe if any of you understand it, please explain it to me. Because when this scene, I think this is the poorest written scene in the entire book.
So they decide to go into one together. And when they go in, Livira immediately is hit by acid air. Like, it is burning her lungies, her eyes, they be doing the tearings. She's like, ah! She can't find Ivar.
What was she like? Say that again.
I'm not doing it again.
I missed that part. What was it like?
No. You'll see it when you edit. Anyway, so
I'm gonna edit it in, but slower.
Yeah, please do. And it's like, please.
Thanks. And so she pops out. She gets out and she's like, oh, wow. That was rough. And then Ivar comes back and is like, Lavira, what the fuck happened? Are you okay? And she was like, you didn't get hit by the toxic gas? And he was like, no, it was like when I went into my sister's world, I was a ghost in that world. And then they're like, wow, that's weird. And she's like, if you go into the past so you don't affect it, you probably are just a ghost. But if you go into the future, you can interact with that world and it can affect you. So my lungs were burned because it was my future, but it was the past for you. Your little pool is so much farther ahead than mine. So you're like hundreds of the years into the future. And then later, the book is going to stare you in the face and it's going to say, if you go to a pool in the future, you can never go back to your own pool. It is now the past for you. If you go into a future one, you are now in the future, and that is now your timeline, and you can't go back. This bitch goes into the future, gets her lungs burned, and then can go back to her timeline willy-nilly. Big ol' plot hole!
I was so confused during that moment.
If I had been thinking about it that much, yeah, that would have really bothered me. I didn't, because at a certain point, I was like, this is just time magic. Like, there's too many rules for this for me to keep it involved. The time magic stuff in the book is just not super good.
Angry Otter does make an okay point. I will click on it. Although, I thought the acid world was next to her, so the same time, but a different place. Mayhaps.
The whole point is that the reason you can be affected by stuff and affect stuff when you go forward, but you can't go back.
Maybe it's different if you go to the same time but different place. And that's how you can travel between worlds. Look, it's not explained and that's still a fault. So regardless, it's a plot hole.
I don't like it. It unless somebody can point to where in the text it explains itself, it feels like a giant fucking plot hole.
And the thing is, the time stuff I find unnecessary. That has nothing to do with the library being found all the time, that all this timey-wimey, like, I was my own grandfather stuff.
Or your love ends up being your mother, in a way.
Yeah, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Thanks, I hate it.
I would have just preferred minus the time and just do places. Like, that's good enough, in my opinion. Also, I really wanted the twist to be, like, again, that this is not Earth, that this is not a lot, like, maybe there was an Earth at one point, but this is so far down the line, and they invaded this other planet, and that's why, and they, like, ruined all the resources because humans are the roaches of the universe, and that type of thing. I mean, I know that's not what they was going for, but...
I mean, to be honest, I actually don't even really like the whole stuff with the Saba and the other people. I actually don't even think we're two races who are constantly in a fight for survival. I actually don't really like that as a theme, but we don't really have time to get into why.
No, I don't either. It makes me upset, but whatever.
So it's all a little bit messy. But basically, yeah, they're 13 now.
She's 13. He's 20.
She's 13.
So.
He's still 20, right?
So she's getting there. She's almost at the age where he can fuck her.
She's not. First of all, Katie,
nowhere
this is
near.
A Christian podcast.
In the state of Illinois.
Anyway, they come out of the thing, and she's like, wow, that was an interesting experience. And then he was like, I think I'm going to use this to try find the so many possibilities.
Jesus. I was going to say, also, in dog years, she's legal, but that doesn't count here.
No, oh my God. Anyway, so he's like, I'm going to use these pools to try see what happened to my brother, Meland. He went missing, and I don't know if he's dead, and I'll, because they realize that they are, because of their expectations and their, like, intentions, they are guiding the time of the exchange. They keep finding each other as they're back in the exchange together. And the idea is you can go into the time period you want to go into.
I got very confused between Meland and Mayland or whatever. The friend, Lavira's
it's
friend.
It's just two very close names.
I thought that meant something. I was waiting this whole time
for
because
them to be the same person? Nope.
Yes. Yeah.
It immediately goes out the window when the twist happens, because, you know, he's like, I'm going to see my brother. And then escapes come. And they're like, why the fuck are escapes coming in here? And the escapes go to, and he gets to fight. And she's like, wow, he's so powerful. He's such a good fighter. He's so fast. Wow.
Oh, that's so hot. My nether regions.
And then the escape goes to attack her, and she falls back into her world. And the escape comes in with her, but it has invaded the assistant that was there and, like, seeped into her. So now the assistant is like black, and it starts chasing her, and she has to run out of the library, and she gets out, and the door closes behind her, and she's like, wow, that was close. And then we're gonna jump until she's 20, and by the time she's 20, she's spent the past 7 years, like, But, well, it goes to when she's 17, which is when she gets to become a librarian. And, like, the king's like, no, she can't be a librarian. She's just a... And Newt's like, yes, she can be a librarian. I spoke to the head librarian, and now she's a librarian, and people are trying to kill her still. She goes back, and again, there's this whole politics things about, like, her getting to become a librarian, and she's like, you used me. And he's also like, Lavera, things are cyclical. Things are not what they seem. You gotta pay attention. We've done this before 100 times. Don't get caught. Be sneaky. Maybe the Sabers are okay. And she's like, I was with you right until you said that last thing, because fuck the Sabers.
Out of nowhere. And at that point, I want everyone to know, that's when I realized, and even though I won't say it right now, what Ute was. And I was like, I wonder how we're going to get there. And then I jumped to another thing, and I was like, oh, so the soldier, from which we have almost barely discussed, even though I like was obsessed with it the entire time, the soldier that was with the assistant with Ivar as he grew up, I'm like, huh, I wonder if somehow that's so-and-so, and that's how that happened. And then I was like, no, I'm really confused, and I'm still confused.
And then she goes to the library and she does her stuff, and then we time skip to when she's 20, and basically the thing to learn about her is that she's been continuing to write her magnum opus, and it's basically semi-biographical stuff that happens to her, but it's also just her fantasy adventure stories of her and Ivar going on adventures. So she has spent the past 7 years, since she was 13 to 20, being like, that guy, I dream about that guy.
Self-insert fan fiction.
Exactly, with another human. That's literally what she's doing. It is self-insert fan fiction, and she's like, me and Eva went on an adventure, and sometimes things got steamy. And she's just been writing it throughout everywhere. Politically, things are getting a little rough. The Sabas are literally outside the city. They're going to invade. Things are a little not great. Her and her friend Arpix... because she finally told Arpix what happened to her into the library and stuff, and he's been trying to help her get back to the exchange.
Arpix is a friend we've barely mentioned, because it doesn't really matter in all the scheme of things.
Despite him being in a lot of the book.
And Arpix really should have been her husband, first and foremost. But I'm neither here nor there on that. I liked Arpix a lot, okay? And I was fine with them being buddies, but it made a lot more sense to me if she ended up falling in love with someone she spent half her life with, rather than the five, but you know, like, I guess fantasies really do.
The power of the mythological man in your head.
Yeah, I don't ship it. She goes back and she's like 20 now, and she meets, by the way, this whole time for Eva, it's still been like 3 minutes. And he meets her, and she's like hot now, and he's like, who is this lady? And she's like, oh, not this again, which I thought was kind of funny as a line. And now they decide to go to a city together, and by this point, she's full manic pixie girl. And the city they go to is her city, but at a different time period, and it's filled with dead people. And not just dead people and Saba, and they're together, and it looks like it was a gas attack.
Some people are holding babies, some people are just chilling, dying, dead in the bed.
And they're all in normal people clothing. Nobody's in soldier gear or has weapons.
And they're like, okay, that was weird.
She's like, fuck the Sabah. And they killed themselves with their own weapon. And he's like, another thing to mention is he went into another pool prior to this point, and he saw this same city, but at a different point in history, but with that had also been invaded by Saba, but it was more like a classic invasion where, like, the Sabas came over the wall. Anyway, and so there's also a moment here where she's like, ooh, I can make my nails a different color. And he was like, I don't see your nails as a different color. And she's like, what if we're just seeing the expectations of each other? And he doesn't actually know what I look like. And when he actually sees me, he's going to think I'm gross looking. That would suck.
That's true, Livia. You are gross looking to him. It should have been that way anyway.
And then they, like, while they're in the city, she sees, like, the... a white child, like an albino child.
You mean Ute? Instantly Ute?
Yeah. just scurrying through this, and there's this point where they look at each other, and he's like, nobody should be able to see us. We're ghosts. I've been in two places where I was a ghost, and nobody could see me except for assistants. Also, when they first get to the city, there is, like, 100 assistants all just on the steps of this, like... the stairs that is the mouth of a wolf, and they're all there, and there are two pools of assistant blood on the earth, because one of the things that happen how she gets back here is she discovers that to open portals you need the blood of an assistant, and she has to go and find that dead one that
which
she found.
Is kind of a really cool concept, because then are the assistants basically like angels? Basically, like, I don't know, that would have been fun to play with, the more biblical nature of this. It's because there is a heavy, we haven't really discussed it, but there is a massive heavy biblical like theme going on in this novel.
They and there's two pools of assistants' blood just on the floor, and that's what they've popped out of. Like they as portals, they because you have to make a circle with the assistants' blood, but there's just pools of it, and so they've popped out
And
of
then
those.
children's footprints leading
Yes,
away into the
little
city.
tiny footprints leading away into the city, and you're like, oh, something weird has happened here. Like two assistants have gone kaput, and then something walked away from
I
that
was like,
spot.
oh, they either sacrificed children, because at first I didn't catch that it was the assistant's blood, or I was like, or that's Yute and someone else. It's because Yute is like all white.
Well, you already know because he skipped over this, but we've already seen Yamala and we've met Valente. Yamala is the head librarian. She's also very white. And at first, I was like, "Sister?" No, it's you. It's Yute's wife. So immediately when there's a point where they see the like white children, I'm like, "Oh, this is Yamala and Yute." Like, I don't know what's happening, but that's 100% what that is. But anyway, and so she's like, "Wow, these." Because they specifically asked to be taken to a time period where there was no fighting, and she was like, "Of course, all it could show us was them already dead."
Can I just say, Levira is so butthurt in this entire. I cannot describe how out of character she felt in this scene. I was like, she got so boring as an adult.
And Ivar is like, this doesn't make sense. What is happening? Like, Ivar is suddenly the reasonable smart one, where he's like, this doesn't make sense. And he's not having the intense reaction Levira is. Levira is real fucking pissed. Like, super angry about it.
Another thing we haven't mentioned that's been mentioned in the book several times, so that you'll remember it, is that Sabas are so terrible, they are now synonymous with foe as a word. And you're originally like, oh, that's cool, an interesting, linguistical thing, world-building detail. It will become relevant shortly.
So they go back into the thing, and she's like, oh, this is terrible. And they're kind of talking. And then all of a sudden, Clovis appears. And Clovis is like.
What a hard switch, by the way. I was so confused in that moment.
Also, they kissed when they were in the city. I forgot to mention that. Like, they were in the city and they were flying. And then they did the smoochy smooching. So they're like, woohoo. But then they're like sad. And then they come back into the exchange and they're like, wow, what an experience. And then Clovis attacks. And Clovis is like, brother, how could you? You're fornicating with a Saba. And he's like, no, you don't. You're not seeing her. The exchange changes how you see things. That's not what she's not a. And Clovis is like, you're wrong. It might ch fuck with your eyes, but I see clearly. And then in that moment, Levira realized that Clovis was correct. And then you find out that they are not there. She's a human. He's a canis.
Dog person.
And they've both been calling each other, like, they are both each other's Saba, because Saba just means enemy. So when they were like, it's the Sabas, you think the whole time that the people that attacked Clovis's family were the Saba. No, they were the dog people, but the humans were the ones that attacked. So now they look upon each other.
That's a great twist, but I just did not like the execution.
It's not a bad twist. It's okay. There are some hints leading up. Like, I kept being like, why are the Saba so inconsistent in their power level? Like, why are sometimes they really strong and other times a human can kill them with a book? And like, then you're like, oh, okay, now it makes sense. Again, this human Saba like cycle of violence, I'm not sure why that's the thing we went with. I don't love it for this book, but like, it is an interesting idea.
So she's like, oh no. And then Clovis is going to get her. And like, Clovis is literally like stepping on Ivar's head, like, fuck you,
Oh, yeah,
buddy.
no. Doesn't she at one point, like, I forget what's described, but he, like, she does some. Okay, I really dislike characters that are on the same side as each other. And then when characters horribly aggressive and just hurts the other person all the time.
Yeah, if it's not hot, then it's no
And
good.
so it, I really disliked also, because after this, right, and I'll let Maria continue, but I want to focus on the aggression of this. It's been mentioned many times that Clovis just beats the shit out of Ivar. And then afterwards, like, she literally beats him to a pulp so bad he loses consciousness and, like, had to be brought to a circle to be mended. And I'm just like, I hate Clovis. I really
Yeah,
do.
she goes to attack Levira. Levira falls back into her pool. Clovis gets one claw on her. So as Levira comes through, Arpix is there, because her and Arpix went into the exchange together but ended up getting separated. They've also met Valente, by the way. Valente is one of the guides in the library, and he's a black, like a black void wolf. You don't see features, you see shape. But he is heckin' goodest boy and very good boy. So Arpix pops out, and Arpix has just got a handful of books, and he's like, oh, this is
I had
great.
a great time shopping.
And then he sees Levira on the floor bleeding out from her leg, and she's like, Yeah, she's like, I'm not hurt. And he's like, and she's sitting there like, oh my God, he's a Saba. Oh my God, I kissed a Saba. No wonder, because there's a point where she kisses him and she's like, funny, he's clean shaven, but it felt kind of bristly. And you're like,
Oh, you're right. That's funny. So we're running up against the time. We started like 20 minutes late, essentially. But why don't I do the thing where I describe what happens till the end of the book, and then you guys can go in and backfill it.
Okay.
And because I don't really understand a lot of this, it's going to go super fast. Lavira goes back to her time period. Oh no, the Caniff are the Saba are attacking and they're taking the walls. Yute is like, hey, the only place to hide is in the library. Let's go to the library. They gather a bunch of people and they start running for the library. We find out that actually the Saba have gotten some human-like friends, people, and so they can get into the library as well. Because what they really want is the library. Because this whole time there's this thing about like how some bugs are chasing them. Okay, they get into the library, but once they're in the library, they accidentally it gets on fire, so they're having to run from a fire. By the way, this is like 2 or 3 hours from the end of the book. This is a massive part of the book, and none of it is important. It's all action, basically. Okay, eventually they find Eva again. Eva and Lavira are like a little bit like, oh no, they're the enemy, but they get over it so fast, and they go towards finding each other hot. Again, it's like they can now see each other, and I guess Lavira was a furry this whole time, and Eva was whatever the opposite of a furry is, a pink skin.
Ew, don't call it a pink skin.
Naked mole rat.
And they're like, okay, and Clovis wants to kill them all, but Yute is like, stop. I was an assistant. You can't, these are not your true enemies. And like, they have. There's this whole stuff about the fire chasing them and how they get out from it. And eventually, what happens is that we find. We're just gonna get so mad at how much I'm gonna skip here. Basically, what happens is that all of Lavira's books, Eva ended up falling to the machine with. And so he has been living their
No.
lives together.
Oh
That she
my God, no.
just leave
No.
it for
One
now.
book. She
Leave it.
compiled it. She compiled it into one book.
Yeah. Sorry, that's what I meant. Yes. And that book he fell into the thing with. And that's the thing that's why she's the woman, even though they didn't spend that much time together. He basically was in her imagination this whole time.
He lived through her role play fantasy fan fiction.
Yeah, they're so like, ooh, cutie, and there's stuff about like stories and their meaning, and it like wasn't as good as the end of The Hogfather, which I find it hard to say because I didn't like that movie that much. But anyway, and so. So they're like, okay, they live whatever lifetime in the thing, imagination. And then to save her, some of her friends who are going to get murdered, her, Lavira and the soldier, who we haven't talked about, but again, he's a fun character, they basically inhabit the assistant machine people things, and they get them out. But the problem is that they kind of lose themselves in the assistant things. Like, they're not really able to think very far.
It's because the assistants don't really, they exist outside of time. So Lavira and Malar, which I called it, not the
Okay.
Lavira part, but the Malar part.
I
This is not
called
part of the
Malar
six
as
minute.
well.
This is not part of the 6 minutes. And so basically what happens is that it sets up a time loop. The Saba who are chasing them become the ancestors who then become the four kids. And she was the assistant the whole time. So she is both his mother and his lover. Super cool. And then earlier in the book, they had been let out. They had opened up one of the chambers, and so now we see that, oh no, and the assistant and the soldier had gone to fight the insect people. And so now we're like, okay, now we're caught up back to the present. We have to find Lavira. She's been in this machine this whole time. And then the book ends. Okay, that was close to what
That was actually not bad, Maria. You
No,
have
that
to
was
admit.
not. No, he fucked up timelines.
It
The
doesn't
cause and
matter.
effects
It
were
doesn't
terrible.
matter.
No, my goal when I tell the plot is that someone who has not listened or read the book can follow. Nothing about that was followable.
You're getting firsthand experience of how it felt to read this book.
No.
It's actually funny because when I finished this book, I was like, oh, okay, it's good Maria's here because I really just did not like figure it. I was not paying enough attention to really follow what's going on. People won't know I'm dumb because I'll just let Maria explain it.
No, it's just, look, everyone, it just, the pace at that point, once we get revealed, so Lavira goes back into her own time with Malaa, but of course, as we've already stated, if you go into the future, which they had in order to heal Malaa, it's because his library was not on fire and hers was, and Malaa was going to die because Clovis attacked him because he's a human. Once we get to this point where like things are starting to come together, it's literally everyone. Like I, with the way the pacing was before, I would have expected that her experience inside of the assistant would have been prolonged to some degree, and we would have had like some like poetic little moments where like some weird timey-wimey things happen and like all that stuff. But I, like somebody else also said, Thea said I was not sold on the mother thing. I was not
terrible.
Sold.
It was at terrible. All.
It did not, because there were several times where the assistant that Levera is supposedly within the body of is kind of aggressive towards Levera and is like nasty towards her. And I was like, oh.
But she wasn't the assistant yet. She wasn't in the assistant.
When they go and they go into his timeline and she's opened the door and they run back, the assistant gets angry and eyes turn red as she turns to Levera and is like, you opened the door. And then there was a couple of other little moments where there's like this, maybe I read into it too much and it's not actually passive aggression, but it did certainly come off that way. And just in like one or two other moments. So it's not like there's a littering of a whole bunch of moments where this happens, but it, so when it was revealed that Levera was actually within the body of the future assistant, I was like, I don't see that foreshadowing at all. Like, there was just like none of that. Now Malar's on the other
side. Malar hardcore was well set up.
Oh yes,
the minute he said, and if you hurt her I'll kill you, I was like, it's fucking Malar, it's Malar. I don't know why Malar's here. I don't know why he's in this body. Somehow Malar went from a person, and I thought like maybe he chose to like immortalize himself, like a sword heart style.
That's exactly
someone.
What I thought was going to happen. And that shit didn't happen. I hated that Levera was the assistant.
I was okay with it. By that point, I was very like, okay. I knew the assistant was going to probably be her. And so I was like, okay, that's fine. It's whatever. I think it's fine, mostly because she wasn't really like the assistant the whole time. She was really like inside the assistant, but not really there. Yeah. She was really just in hanging out there, hermit crab style.
What I want to focus on is the idea of Levera's book, because the book that wouldn't burn, not that Will mentioned this at all, but it's the title of the thing.
Not important.
The book it's that not. Didn't burn, it's apparently super important to the next book, so it's vaguely important, is Levera's book. Because Levera brings her book into the future with her, so from the past into the future, it becomes its own, like it's out of time in a really weird way. So there's a point where she's taken her book, which she took into the future, touched to Ivar's, and then they kind of merge. So that, because Ivar's book had more stories than she had written in hers yet, so they kind of merge and become a weird timey-wimey thing. And there's a point where they go back to her timeline where she is now a ghost, but her book is still present because it is still a book of the library. And there's a point where it doesn't burn, and it can't burn because it is a part of the future. And it is it exists in the future, so it cannot burn now.
Which is a cool concept.
It is, but I don't like the whole, how did Ivar end up going into the machine with this, the mechanism with this book?
And why, when he left the mechanism, why was the book on the top of a giant bookshelf, and then it's only so happened that he bumped into it and all the books fell?
Everybody else knows what the book they went in was, and they also remember what happened mm-hmm. during that. Why does he not remember his book experience?
He should have had the book from the beginning and not have ever turned to the page because it said not to, but he's still stuck and he doesn't know what to do with it.
The whole arc of his character is becoming active enough to actually turn the page and not just listen to the yeah. goddamn thing on the page. And anyway, so it just, I don't like that. I don't like, because there's this idea that the stories are being written with the two of them where they are experiencing these stories together. And I don't love that. Like, there's a point where when Levera goes into the assistant, she picks up the book and she sees a story that she's written, but Ivar kind of isn't interacting with her at the same time. And it gets really timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly. And it doesn't work, and it doesn't have the emotional impact that it should have had.
Oh, God, that's a horrible concept, Thea. Why did you say that? Oh, God. Oh, I hate that
concept.
Remember,
because Levera hadn't written it yet, so it is timey-wimey. But she had.
No, but the future stuff that she didn't write... Oh, God, that hurts my brain.
No, but she would have had to. She was the assistant this whole time. She hadn't written anything else. The version he went into the mechanism with...
It has been written up until that point by her. Yeah. Okay, so the thing is, a lot of the time stuff just doesn't super make sense to the reader. It may make sense in the author. It may theoretically make sense, but in terms of how it is communicated to the reader, it really doesn't make a ton of sense. And it's very hard to follow. And it kind of... You really do lose a lot of the human stakes and the character stakes in trying to conform to this time circle that I just didn't think was necessary. Like, this isn't really a story about time. This is a story about the library and literature. And again, Eva's story is about weird time stuff, but the story I was more interested in was in how the library affected people.
And societies. The whole nine yards. The ending is really breakneck. And unfortunately, the emotional stakes, because the romance isn't as developed, because there's this whole point where he finds her. He has to go back to his time, because the last time he saw the assistant that he grew up with, him and Levira had been running away, and they left the assistant and the soldier to deal with some bug people. And at the end, when he realizes, oh my god, Levira is the assistant, he's like, I abandoned her to some bug people, she might be dead. And he's like, he's going to rescue her. And he's like, I'm coming, baby, I got you. And he finds her, and she's shattered on the floor and obviously dead. And he's like, no, she's dead. How could this happen? And here's the thing. I thought maybe we were going to leave a beat for some emotional reaction, but immediately
all of his siblings come out, and they're like, yo, we actually know where your girlfriend is. Cut
but scene. No, not that. Not that. It's the ghost of Millar and her being like, aw. And Millar's being like, that's a little hectic. And she's like, well, he does love me. And then they're like, why is he running? Why isn't he running away? Why is he fighting the monsters? And it just saps all the tension out of it. But also the emotional reaction, because there's a moment where you as the reader are like, did she actually die? And I actually thought that would be really interesting. If that she's dead and now we can only interact with past versions of her, mm-hmm. you know? That kind of thing. And like, but this would make it a sad moment. And there's this moment where you're like, is she dead? And you're not as sad as you should be, because the love between, you're not as sad, you're sad for your version of Levira that you've grown for, but you're not sad for Ivar that much, because he literally met this woman 24 hours ago as her current self. Like, the 20-year-old version of her, he's only known for maybe 20 hours. So you're not, and yes, he now has the memories of the book, but again, the memories in the book are just stories Levira wrote. They are not real things. Now, you absolutely can grow to love something through stories. How many of us have fallen for men or women that don't exist? How many of us have gotten so wrapped up in a world that we finish the book and we're sad, even though it was a good ending, we're sad because it's done. And so, like, that is entirely possible. But again, there needs to be a moment where you're reconciling the fact that she wrote most of the stories in that book based on a version of Ivar that wasn't Ivar. It was just her idea of him from when she was 13.
Well, and the other thing is, we never saw that version with him. We see, like, a chapter of him hanging out there, so we don't feel what he felt. We don't grow to love this fictional version of their life together. And so, like, it's, and, you know, again, this is not a bad book, except for, like, I don't know, the last 2 hours were kind of just hard to get through and didn't make a ton of sense. Because I was just like, okay, can the fire catch them already? Can we just be done with this? Why is this action scene going on for so long?
Yeah, it felt like it was really being drawn out, and but fast forward. It was drawn out fast forward. So it was not, like, enjoyable.
And everybody lives. So there's a thing that happens in the first season of the rebooted, or the, like, new Who, with the Eccleston doctor, where the prior to this one episode, the doctor and Rose are not able to save everyone. They just have to accept the fact that people are gonna die, and that, and in this one episode they managed to save everyone, and it is it's one of the best episodes. Katie, what the fuck are you talking about?
I actually have no idea what episode you're talking about.
The gas mask making one faces. The gas mask one.
Oh yeah, no, that's great. That's great. I'm just fucking with you, Maria.
But there's literally a point where, like, he's like, everybody lives, and it's this great moment, and you as the viewer care, because we've seen people die and them not be able to save everyone. But here, everybody lives, and I'm like, could we not even have Carlotte die? Could no one die? Like, she saves all of her friends. Every single one of them. And you're like, not one. We couldn't have just had one person die.
And then, technically.
And then I thought, ah, Levira was the coin she spent. She spent herself to save everyone else. Yep. And she had to die. But that's not what happens either.
Nope, not at all.
No, they're alive. They're going to be fine at the end. They just have to go back through the exchange.
I would have really loved if Malah and, like, also, can we just say Malah's character completely changes in the last little bit, too? Like, he doesn't seem like himself at all, just like everyone else. But also, like, I really was hoping that she had died, and like you said, only the past versions of her or a past version of her could be like accessed. But I guess it makes sense that she wouldn't. It's because she didn't really die. Her soul, her ghost was just stuck in there. But wait, hold on a second. If the ghost was stuck in there in the past and it was stuck until the present, wouldn't at this point, wouldn't she be solid?
No, because she's still inside the assistant, I think.
No, but once the assistant breaks and she's outside the assistant.
Yeah, I think she's so far in the future, like, it's not actually, like, from when she went in, so she went in during her time period. So, I don't know, I think she's gonna go back into the exchange. It doesn't actually make sense, but I think she's gonna go back into the exchange and it's fine. And it'll be like, hi, it's Lavera, nice to see you.
Yeah, this is not one of those books that has that kind of, like, bittersweet, oh no, we'll never meet again in Paris kind of a thing. The one thing we haven't really brought up is that the writing style and the prose are good and they're fairly strong, but A, they're not super strong, and B, he has this habit of having his characters think about big concepts. One of the things I said about Diana Wynne Jones is that often she has a way of phrasing something that makes you think about a concept in a way different than you did before. You're like, oh wow, I've never thought of it that way, but it feels so true. He keeps doing like a budget version of that where he'll have his characters kind of think about something philosophical, but you're like, yeah, but this is not a particularly smart way of putting it, or it's not annoying in the way that some of the books we've read get very pretentious about it, but it's like a lot with this book. It's okay, but it's not great.
I enjoyed it. And I think it is, of the books we've read for this channel, I would say it's one of the better ones we've read, but it, for me, it was very frustrating because it felt like there was a lot of potential and the stuff that I was really interested in and the book wasn't. And then the things that the book did, like when it was like, no, I'm forging my path, I don't know that it necessarily did all of it. I will say that it is, I would probably read the second book if it was not, like, to read the second book, it would have to be for this podcast because it is too long to sneak in between. Like, there are some sequels I can sneak in between because they're shorter. And I can, like, listen to them between Saturday and Sunday evening. Like, once we do a recording, Saturday morning and Sunday night is my time period where I'm, like, free and I can listen to something else.
It takes me too long to pick the next book.
And I'm like, let me wait. And so in that nice little window, I've just, there are sometimes where I don't even ask him if the next book is ready. I'm just like, I'm going to assume and I'm just going to take my little window and I can read stuff. But there's no way where I could.
I can't read the sequel unless it's required of me. The problem is, it's not that it was poorly written or anything. Like I said, I really liked it. I was really engaged. But there's a certain, like, the themes that are encapsulated in this book and the way it's executed just make me, like, I feel like I'm on the edge of not being able to hold my breath anymore. Anxiety. It makes me anxious. It gives me anxiety. Yes.
Well, and it's not such a sufficiently good book that it's worth the price. You know, this isn't The Priest's Tale. I think Mark Lawrence is a good writer. I'm actually kind of more curious to go read some of his other stuff. I kind of want to look at his Prince of Nothing series again, because that was written in a very different style. I think maybe this was just a too many things in too large a package problem. I think one of the things that it made us a little bit, or at least made me more charitable to this book, is it's not a YA or a romantic-y. And yes. So, like, it was just nice not running into the tropes that you did.
Yeah, whereas if we had spent
2 years reading guy books about fantasy, maybe we wouldn't have liked it as much. Or we would have found some of these things more annoying. So I'm wondering how much of that played into it.
Yeah, like, we finally just went into a different genre.
Yeah, I think probably a little bit, but probably not that as much as you might be suspecting. Because if it was truly, I think we've read enough of like some mixed genre stuff to be like, this is not great to read.
Yeah, I think we probably would have been a little bit harsher, but still would have said that overall it was pretty good, because we tend to be pretty objective despite what the internet thinks. Okay, any last thoughts?
If you've read the sequel, let us know what you think about it below.
Oh my god, yeah, please tell us if it's worth it.
Are there other books by male authors that you would suggest? We are really tired of the female ones, and it was nice to read something different written by a man with a testosterone.
Putting what Will said aside, actually, I would be very interested in reading more male books. So, or just like not. I would. I'm ready now.
Something that's not YA or romanticy would be nice. Let us know in the comments below. And as always, you can join our Patreon. We love you, our parasocial darlings.
Bye.